This is the Quality News Network. In Washington this morning, President Bush held a news conference to push for his version of the anti-terrorism bill. Since Congress adjourns in a few weeks, he says it doesn't have a lot of time to pass the bill, which calls for tougher interrogations of terror suspects. Mr. Bush wants part of the Geneva Conventions to be changed so that U.S. officials cannot be prosecuted for war crimes for using the tougher techniques. Mr. Bush also denied assertions that the U.S. has lost moral credibility around the world. In Ohio, Republican Representative Bob Ney pleaded guilty to federal charges related to the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal. He is cooperating with the Justice Department in exchange for a lighter prison term. In Washington, officials are trying to find the source of a 10-statewide outbreak of the E. coli virus after one person died and dozens more have fallen ill. The FDA is urging Americans to discard any bagged spinach because of a possible link. Investigators are focusing on spinach grown and processed in California's Salinas Valley. In Yemen today, officials foiled an attempted suicide bombing on two oil facilities. Four attackers and a security guard were killed. In Iraq, violence continues today with the deaths of two more U.S. soldiers. That brings a total U.S. death toll over the last 2 days to at least six. U.S. officials also report one soldier is missing. Meanwhile, Iraqi officials said today that trenches will be dug around Baghdad to protect the city against car bombings. In and around Baghdad, dozens more tortured and bullet-ridden Iraqi bodies have been found over the last 24 hours. A total of 130 people have been killed over the last 2 days, either in attacks or tortured and dumped in various locations. In Brussels, the European Union has agreed to back a new national unity government between Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Hamas, but there's still no word whether financial aid will resume. In the Pacific, Tropical Storm Lane has now reached hurricane strength. The National Hurricane Center reports it's now headed toward Baja California. Visitors to Google Earth can now view satellite photographs of the effect of human activity on the world. Google has paired up with the United Nations Environmental Program to provide satellite photographs from around the world. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Astronauts made their third and final spacewalk today. The space shuttle Atlantis returns to Earth on Wednesday. Ford Motor is shutting down two more plants in the U.S., bringing the total number of shuttered plants to 14. 10,000 salary jobs will also be cut in addition to buyout offers for hourly workers. Ford will also stop paying dividends until 2009, the year it expects to return to profitability. That's 1 year later than first expected. Northwest flight attendants have been barred by court order from striking or taking any other job actions until the bankruptcy court makes a decision. The flight attendants union plans to appeal. Chrysler says its third quarter loss could top $1.5 billion. That's more than twice the amount anticipated. Freddie Mac reports that rates on 30-year mortgages have fallen for the seventh time in the past 8 weeks to 6.43%. That's the lowest level in 5.5 months. The Los Angeles Regional Water Board has voted to fine cities surrounding Santa Monica Bay up to $10,000 a day if beaches fail to meet clean water standards. And the U.S. experienced its worst heat from June to August in the last 70 years. The average temperature was 74.5 degrees. Light sweet crude settled at $63.33. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was up 33 points, NASDAQ up 7, S&P 500 up 4. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. This is a Department of Homeland Security alert. This is a Department of Homeland Security alert. The terrorists have gotten your spinach. We repeat, the terrorists have gotten your spinach. Please be advised that there may be a terrorist hidden in any bag of spinach which you have recently purchased. E. coli bacteria is thought to be the primary source. However, left untended on a countertop, a leaf of infected spinach could, much as was the case in that great documentary Invasion of the Body Snatchers, morph into a terrorist in your very home. Again, the terrorists have gotten your spinach. Thank you. Now go about your business of being terrified every day, every minute, every hour, every instant of your very lives. We do appreciate your compliance. This is a security control. Jesus. That's where we're going, isn't it? That's where we're going. Be afraid of the spinach. Rutabagas. Rutabagas of terror. Wait a minute. What about the kumquats? Jesus God, the beets are after you! This is what it all comes down to. This is what happens with terror media. I'm Bob, by the way, for those of you just tuning in. And this kind of thing happens from time to time on this program. I went to the CNN website. And there it is. E. coli sickens 94 in 20 states. This is terror television. This is terror journalism. Now, I understand there's a need to get the information out there. I remember, a couple of years ago when people were dropping dead from eating sub sandwiches with tainted Roma tomatoes from Sheetz convenience stores. I understand the need to get the information out there. But we have reached a saturation point in American media where everything is cause for alarm. Everything is scary. Everything is spooky. Because you are to be a terrified, compliant public. Do you see the connection? I'm sure you do. Because while, no, it's not Al-Qaeda spinach, for God's sakes. But it is yet another ongoing attempt to keep you terrified. I have thought so much about the phone call we had from our friend Susan in Oregon last night, over the last 24 hours. Every one of us has enough on our plate that there is something to be scared of. Every last one of us. So consequently, if you sit down and you think about it for any time at all, you realize that this business of being terrified of some guy 8,000 miles away, 6'4", skinny Arab with a portable dialysis machine trailing out behind him, is really pretty stupid in the grand scheme of things. So, you know, at least think about those things as we go along. Meanwhile, a terrified Senate continues debate on a terrifying piece of legislation that could undermine the entire constitutional structure of our nation. And I think we begin to get an idea of just how ugly the debate is getting when we look at or listen to audio from Dear Leader's speech or Dear Leader's press conference today. I know you heard some of it on Bruce's program just before this one. I hope we will go into some greater depth with some other stuff as well. I'm not so much concerned with the audio with David Gregory right off the top of it. I was thinking more in terms of what he did with Mr. Smith of the Associated Press. Let's see if we can bring now Dear Leader in this clip is explaining he goes from wanting to torture people and eavesdrop on you and me and get, you know, Aunt May's famous fudge recipe to talking about the Patriot Act. Let's see if we can make some horse sense of this. No, Agnes?
Not yet.
Okay, so tell me when you've got it queued up.
I will.
Okay, let's just take it straight. Go right ahead. No, dear, just... Okay, we... No. It's Friday. We're all sort of Fridayed, but you've got it there, don't you, dear? Will it? Can you not make it play?
No, it won't play.
It won't play.
No, it's frozen.
Okay, well, it's frozen.
Amen.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that technical note, dear. I appreciate it. But no, he said in discussing the Patriot Act, we needed to, and this is a quote, tear down walls so we could share information between investigation folks and criminal folks. Really. No, he said it. We may have it for you later in the evening. That's just what you get out of Dear Leader from time to time. And then the snippy business with David Gregory. Have you ever seen anyone so unpresidential in their entire life? It was just embarrassing, wasn't it? It was just sad. There's the supposed most powerful man on earth, the leader, the so-called leader of the free world. And he's so baffled and so bamboozled and so completely out of it that he has to argue with David Gregory. I said that's all. I know you want to ask that's all. Next question. It was pathetic. And it really did show the contempt in which he holds anything but an absolutely compliant press. Because he's gotten used to it, hasn't he? He's gotten used to a compliant press. He's gotten used to having a lapdog press. A press that doesn't dare gainsay anything that he puts forward. And the reason I start with all of this is I'm sitting here holding on to a story that I believe is worthy of your attention, our attention, and we will get to it when we come back after our break. Do you remember? You remember when the Bush administration was having EPA documents destroyed on global warming? Do you remember when the Bush administration had documentation from the FDA destroyed about sexually transmitted diseases, children, abstinence programs, all of that stuff that turned out it was complete garbage and they buried that information too? Well, they've done it again. They have absolutely done it again, and this time it has to do with that aforementioned compliant media. Now, when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about this. If you want to get involved with the program, you're more than welcome to. The phone number is 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email flies right in to bob@headonradio.com. It's all there to make things totally accessible. So I hope you'll take advantage of that. You know you're welcome to. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to wateruseitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming.
But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Sorry about that. Even highly proficient radio professionals. No, the producer did not flip. You weren't doing the sackcloth and ashes thing running around the room, Agnes.
It looked good though there for a moment, didn't it?
This is what happens when you mess with freeware. But no, we're back. We're happy. We're healthy. We're ready to roll. And let's go to the phones. David joins us from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
We're rolling. You know, I'm happy.
You know, just to coincide or to go along with the theme of dead air, I have an article on dead zones.
Dead zones?
In the sea.
Really?
Dead zones in the ocean. And I'm actually going to send it to you. It's from NASA.
Yeah, places where nothing is alive anymore.
Right, and they have the pictures. And let's just say, So, I mean, if we can't prove global warming, we can definitely prove dead zones pretty bad. I mean, some of the spaces that they have them here looking at are just like, it looks pretty crazy. It looks like something from Armageddon or something.
Is it just scattered across the planet, David, or are there particularized areas?
There's from places like the Baltic Sea and areas, the Black Sea, and just basic different areas that they wanted to showcase of what's happening. And I'll read pieces of it.
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Okay. Creeping dead zones. This is not the title of a sequel to a Stephen King novel. Dead zones in this context are areas where the bottom area, where the bottom water, the water at the seafloor, is anoxic, meaning that it has very low concentrations of dissolved oxygen. These dead zones are occurring in many areas along the coasts of major continents, and they are spreading over larger areas of the seafloor because very few organisms can tolerate the lack of oxygen in these areas. They can destroy the habitat which numerous organisms make their home. But the cause of anoxic bottom waters is fairly simple. The organic matter produced by phytoplankton at the surface of the ocean in the euphotic zone sinks at the bottom, the benthic zone, where it is subject to breakdown by the action of bacteria, a process known as bacterial respiration. The problem is while phytoplankton use carbon dioxide and produce oxygen during photosynthesis, bacteria use oxygen and give off carbon dioxide during respiration. The oxygen used by bacteria is the oxygen dissolved in the water, and that's the same oxygen that all the other oxygen-respiring animals on the bottom, crabs, clams, shrimp, and a host of mud-loving creatures and swimming in the water, zooplankton, require for life to continue. The creeping dead zones are areas in the oceans where it appears the phytoplankton productivity has been enhanced or natural water flow has been restricted, leading to increased bottom water anoxia. If phytoplankton productivity is enhanced, more organic material is produced. More organic material sinks to the bottom and is respired by bacteria and thus more oxygen is consumed. If water flow is restricted, then the natural refreshing flow of oxic waters, water with normal dissolved oxygen concentrations, is reduced so that the remaining oxygen is depleted faster. Many of the areas where increased bottom water anoxia has recently been observed are near the mouths of major river systems. While the sea viewing wide field of view sensor, sea WIFS, can't see the bottom of the ocean, it can see the surface where sediments from river mix with ocean waters. The images shown here are CWIFS observation of the Mississippi River Delta, the Yangtze River mouth in China, and the Pearl River mouth in China near Hong Kong. The apparent cause of the creeping dead zones is agriculture, specifically fertilizer. While fertilizer is...
Nitrates.
Yes.
Exactly.
While fertilizer is necessary to foster bumper agricultural crops, it also runs off the fields into the streams and rivers of a watershed. When the fertilizer reaches the ocean, it just becomes more nutrients for the phytoplankton, so they do what they do best. They grow and multiply, which leads to more organic matter reaching the bottom, more bacterial respiration, and more anoxic bottom water. These effects can be magnified by catastrophe. When the heavy rains of Hurricane Floyd caused extensive flooding in North Carolina in September 1999, the heavy loads of nutrients reached the sounds that lie between the coast and the outer banks. Oxygen levels in the water plummeted. The pictures at the top of the page show the heavy load of sediments thrown into Pamlico Sound.
Yeah, Pamlico, sure. And you know, we see this in other places as well, David. Along the upper Potomac Valley, some of which goes into West Virginia, there are numerous chicken farms.
Mm.
And anybody who's ever kept chickens and used same on garden, chicken leavings, knows that, you know, they're incredibly rich in nitrogen. And it's the same thing that that Michael Pollan was talking about several months ago when we talked to him here on the program. It was after World War One that
right.
That the nitrates that we had been using for high explosives, because they were relatively new at the time, Alfred Nobel having just invented that sort of thing in the last couple of decades, we had lots of nitrate factories left over that were used to make the munitions for World War One, and they were turned based on information that was research information that was available from a German scientist whose name escapes me at the moment. He realized that you could artificially nitrogenize soil with nitrate fertilizers, and boom, there's the massive fertilizer growth industry that became the, among other things, the International Fertilizer Development Center in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. In fact, there's an area there called Nitrate City. And these things, whether it's the nitrate runoff from poultry farms into the Potomac, which makes its way down into the Chesapeake Bay area, that wash up that you mentioned there in Pamlico Sound, it goes on around. It's too easy to say we're poisoning the planet, because
right.
nitrogen-based fertilizers were meant to be a boon to humanity, and in large part they were. But once again, it's like introducing.
I think more of it, part of it's polluting, and also part of it is altering the planet. You have to expect that consequences and side effects.
Well, to a certain extent, I have to note that it's been the nature of human experience on planet Earth to alter the environment. The earliest, or the theories concerning the earliest forms of agriculture, have to do with the unintentional genetic preselection of what went on to become wheat kernels that stuck to the husk instead of shaking loose. The theory being that early man walked through these grass fields and shook the seeds out into a basket, went, dried it, ate it, made bread, whatever, but unintentionally genetically preselected for the seeds that would stay on the husk. And thereafter, at some point, you have to start planting the stuff because it won't shake loose anymore. So we've always altered our surroundings. That's kind of what makes us human. You know, we alter our surroundings when we build a house instead of living in the elements.
Well, I think the problem, though, with the altering is we're altering too much now.
Or we're altering without consideration of what of what the consequences are.
Right. That's what I was getting.
I can't. There's another author out there, and I can't remember his name. He's written a brilliant, humongous bestseller talking about how cultures have altered themselves right out of their own civilizations. And one of the civilizations that he points to is the Maya. They live in a jungle, and they built just beautiful cities.
Right.
And utterly made the entire ecosystem collapse over time. So that, that's the one culture that the Spanish really didn't get a chance to destroy, because they'd already destroyed themselves by around, 1100, 1200 A.D.?
Well, they were waiting for their imam.
Yes. Oh, it's Friday.
Yes, it's Friday. Did you see also, on another note, just to throw in the last remaining dead horse of 9/11, did you see Judicial Watch actually got the FBI to clear two more videos, one from the hotel and a security camera from a convenience store?
All the ones that they've been complaining about that have been much speculated upon for several years now?
Right.
If only we had that one from the hotel, we'd know the truth.
Yeah, what they're going to do is they're going to see a blurry, shaky camera, and they're going to be like, where's the plane?
Yeah, that could be the case.
There's no camera good enough that's going to show anything that people want to see, because it's too late. They put the perception of everything is out there. When you have the president of Venezuela saying Bush was involved with the World Trade Center and the Pentagon attacks, it's pretty much done with. You're not getting that back. The perception is gone. Similar to the perception of the U.S. are not seen as world police. This Iraq and this Iran invasion, I can sum it up in one thing. We wanted everything. We wanted the oil. We wanted the money. We wanted the power. But when I was watching Inside Man today, I caught a quote. It's a Spike Lee movie with Denzel Washington and Jodie Foster. And I caught a quote in the movie. It said, respect is the greatest currency we could ever ask for.
Well, there's truth in that, and we've thrown a lot of it away. I mean, did you see the David Gregory thing today?
I didn't see this. I was hearing about it, and I was like, I guess I have to look at this.
He came unglued.
Bush is clearly has psychopathic tendencies, and there's not enough. You know what's sad? This is sad. There's not enough PR people in the world to shield him. And if you're a psychiatrist, you must be having a field day with this.
Well,
if there are people who study serial killers and people who study psychopaths, they got to be having a field day seeing the president every day making statements and watching his eyes and just watching the manners and just studying every little detail of him, because basically that's sort of what you're looking at.
Well, maybe this is the point where we put out the call and see if he's listening tonight for our resident head on psychologist to come in and have a word or two about this sort of thing, because he was pretty spooky today.
You wonder how crazy Tony Snow is, though.
He
plays a mean flute and saxophone. I'll give him that. But
see, I'm not touching the flute part. I'm just leaving that alone.
He's like Ian Anderson. I saw a video.
He stands propped on one leg? I mean,
I mean, he's a serious, he's a serious jazz flautist. You think I'm joking, but I'm not. I saw a video of it. I was like,
I hate to demean the concept of jazz with associating Tony Snow with it. I far prefer to think of him as the Yanni of the flute.
Smooth ambient, but I mean he's also good on the saxophone. I mean he should, you know what, he missed his calling, Bob. He should be in elevator smooth music jazz market.
And maybe he will be next, David.
Maybe he will be.
You know, where do you go after you've been White House spokesliar?
I don't know. I mean, I think you have to just go into the entertainment business.
Hey, David, thanks so much, man. Have a great weekend,
No problem, Bob. You too.
Later.
Later.
Do we have the clip now, dear?
Yes, we do.
Okay, this is what I had for you. Not necessarily the David Gregory piece, because he went crazy other places, too. Hit it, please, dear.
Around, there was a lot of concern about whether or not the Patriot Act, you know, it was necessary to protect the country. There's no doubt in my mind we needed to make sure the Patriot Act was renewed to tear down walls that exist so that intelligence people could share information with criminal people. It wasn't the case, Mark, before 9/11. In other words, somebody had some intelligence that they thought was necessary to protect the people. They couldn't share that with somebody whose job it was to rob people out of society to prevent them from attacking it. It just made no sense.
Huh?
And so there was a healthy debate.
Dang!
And we finally got the Patriot Act extended after it was passed right after 9/11. To me, that was an indication of just a difference of approach. No one should question the patriotism of somebody who, you know... let me just start over. I don't question the patriotism of somebody who doesn't agree with me.
Dick Cheney, on the other hand...
And I think it's unwise to do that. I don't think that's what leaders do. I do think that... I think that there is a difference of opinion here in Washington about tools necessary to protect the country. The terror surveillance program, or what do you call it, Hutchison? Yeah, the illegal eavesdropping program, is what you wanted to call it. IEP, as opposed to TSP. There's just a difference of opinion about what we need to do to protect our country, Mark. I'm confident the leader, you know, I meant nothing personal. I know that he shares my concern that we pass good legislation to get something done. Ken.
Yeah, well, good luck with all that, George.
Wow.
The snorting, please, Doc, if you're listening, it's psychoanalysis time on Head On. We gotta have some help. What the, if you get a chance, go look at this video. Because the audio is bad enough. See, we had to tear down walls. We had to tear down walls so that intelligence people could serve or share or something with criminal people. Huh? What, Edith? Huh? This is just mind-bogglingly bad. This is the guy who's plotting a war. This is the guy who is plotting the war with Iran. Yeah, I know. And meanwhile, like I mentioned, this little tidbit, it's a screamer. It really is, honest to God, a screamer. The Federal Communications Commission ordered its staff, just wait for it. And we've got this little list of things that ought to be happening as soon as we get a majority in Congress. Add this one. The Federal Communications Commission ordered its staff to destroy all copies of a draft study that suggested greater concentration of media ownership would hurt local TV news coverage, a former lawyer at the agency says. You got that? They took taxpayer dollars, the FCC did. They commissioned a study about whether or not, a scientific method, you got to form the hypothesis, and the hypothesis in this instance was, does greater concentration of media ownership hurt local TV news coverage? And see, when it's real science, I mean, I remember going back, the ninth grade introductory scientific principles. Okay, ninth grade, introductory physical science, ninth grade science. You know, before you even got to the biology, got to touch the microscope, any of that stuff. IPS is what they called it in ninth grade in Northwest Alabama. And the first thing you learn in ninth grade IPS is the scientific method. And how that really works. And one of the things they pointed out to us early on is, you know, if you've got a hypothesis and you want to test it, you know, your theory is this, your hypothesis is this, but you can't try to make the experiment yield your result. You test it neutrally. You test it without regard to whether or not the answer is yes or no, because you're trying to find out whether the answer is yes or no. You're not trying to make the answer be yes. Well, that apparently does not obtain in the Bush administration, because we have seen time and time and time again, from the Downing Street memo, facts were being fixed around the intelligence. Remember? to the Food and Drug Administration, to the Environmental Protection Agency, now to the FCC. The report was written in 2004, and it came to light during the Senate confirmation hearing for FCC Chairman Kevin Martin. Senator Barbara Boxer got a copy of the report from somebody inside the FCC, and I'm sure we will have a federal investigation now to try to ferret that person out and punish them like never before, because, you know, that's what the Bush administration, yeah, they're letting out the secrets here. We got to have the secrets, see? You can't just let everybody in here. They'll see the big board. And Barbara Boxer said it came indirectly from someone within the FCC who believed the information should be made public. Adam Kandib, I don't know, a law professor at Michigan State University, said senior managers at the agency ordered that, quote, every last piece of the report be destroyed. I mean, this is Yul Brynner stuff from Cecil B. DeMille, you know, let no longer the name of Moses be spoken in the land of Egypt. Destroy every last shred of the report that says that says concentrated media ownership isn't good for America. Destroy it. That information must not get out. Because, of course, the Bushevics do so much better the more media ownership is conglomerated, because mostly it's people who support the kind of thinking that George Bush has that have had the savvy in the last 40 years to get into the media business and try to do exactly that conglomeration. Right? Because trying to get liberals involved in media ownership, as we have largely seen, is a damn chore. Because we have this ugly little habit as liberals of thinking that we're above it all. You know, we do our reading for ourselves. We don't have to be told anything. Well, you know what? There's a portion of America that wants to be told things. In a letter sent to Kevin Martin on Wednesday, Barbara Boxer said she was, quote, dismayed that this report, which was done at taxpayer expense more than 2 years ago and which concluded that localism is beneficial to the public, was shoved in a drawer. No, Senator Boxer, it wasn't shoved in a drawer. This isn't the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where it's in some warehouse somewhere burning, where the Ark's burning a hole through the box. It wasn't shoved in a drawer. It was destroyed. This is the research equivalent of good old fashioned. Here it comes. Oh dear God, it's Godwin's law all over again. This is the research equivalent of Nazi book burning. All right, that's what this is. Martin said he was not aware of the existence of the report, nor was his staff. What report? I thought we destroyed them all. We don't have a report. And, of course, if you've destroyed all the copies of the report, or you think you have, you're not lying when you say we don't have a report. Plausible deniability. Plausible deniability. In the letter, Boxer asked whether any other commissioners, past or present, knew of the report's existence. Huh? What report? There ain't no report. And why it was never made public. Well, it wasn't made public because we didn't want it to be made public. And it's our report, not yours. She also asked whether it was, quote, shelved because the outcome was not to the liking of some of the commissioners and or any outside powerful interests, unquote. Oh, hell no. It was full of typos is what it was. The damn thing was barely legible. My God, I mean, the T-H-E-R-E was substituted for T-H-E-I-R. I mean, IT apostrophe S was ITS. It was just terrible. It looked like something done by a ninth grader. It was terrible. We would have been ashamed to put it out. Goodness gracious! And you would have eaten us alive for spending taxpayer dollars on something that crappy. The report, written by two economists in the FCC's media bureau, analyzed a database of, get this, 4,078 individual news stories broadcast in 1998. Well, you know, that must have been fun, because 3,679 of them must have been about Monica. The broadcasts were obtained from Danilo Janich, a professor and researcher at the University of Delaware, and were originally gathered by the Pew Foundation's Project for Excellence in Journalism. Well, see, those are flawed methods to begin with. That's liberal media, isn't it? The Pew Center? The liberals? And the analysis showed local ownership of television stations adds almost 5.5 minutes of total news to broadcast and more than 3 minutes of on-location news. Now, I've got my own questions about some of this. Well, Bill, we're standing here on the overpass waiting for the big ice storm of 1998 to commence. I mean, I've seen that. I saw that when I lived and worked in Atlanta. We were expecting an ice storm. CNN put us up at the Omni Hotel for the night because they figured they'd be off the air the next day because the rest of us couldn't get into work because we'd have martial law because there was an ice storm coming and Southerners can't drive in ice or snow. Frequently not in rain, and sometimes not even on dry pavement. That's one of the joys of the South. But, yeah, I understand what that... At that time, the agency pointed to evidence that, quote, commonly owned television stations are more likely to carry local news than other stations. That's according to... FCC arguments made when it voted in 2003 to increase the number of television stations a company could own in a single market. That's what they said. Well, commonly owned television stations are more likely to carry local news than other stations. Uh-uh. That's not the point. The point is the quality of the news being carried. And right now, I mean, you know, here in West Virginia, we've got a media consortium that owns six or seven TV stations, and they all get the same news feed at the beginning, and then they go to their local stuff. But in the end, the editorial content is all the same thing. It's boop, nice and uniform. Handy for controlling a populace, isn't it? Let's take a break. When we come back, your phone calls are more than welcome. 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, independently owned and operated.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't. Ha, 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
Eight and a half minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. We'll go straight to the phones. And Jim is joining us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. Thanks for your call.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right.
Well, you know, pursuant to one of your caller's references to the dead seas or dead areas of the sea, you know, the food chain is a pyramidal structure, and the plankton is at the bottom of that pyramid, and it's being slowly eroded. And as they say, bigger fish eat little fish, and so ad infinitum. And that process is being interrupted very severely, I think.
Well, that's what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah, that's well, that is what's happening. And one other thing, you know, I found that people drive just as bad up here as they do down south. So, I mean, it's not something huge to that part of the country, okay?
Well, no, it's just a matter of we don't have, you know, having grown up, you know, I guess South Carolina, that's where you were raised. You might see a skiff of snow once in a while, but where I come from, it's an extremely rare occurrence, and frankly, people just lose their minds at the first flake.
Oh yeah, well, you know.
I mean, I've seen everything short of martial law declared over an ice storm.
Yeah, I guess you're right. yeah, and as far as the I lost my train of thought. But anyway, as far as the Bush administration's method of deductive reasoning is concerned, they seem to draw their conclusions and then they go about attempting to find facts to support that conclusion.
Well, that's why the Downing Street memo is so informative, Jim.
Well, and they put the whole process of deductive reasoning on its head. And you can't do that because what you're doing is you want to have an outcome based on your research and your facts and your and a sequentially developed experimentation process or deductive process. And they're not interested in that. They're interested in having their conclusions first, and then they want to find facts to support that. I mean, Columbus was like this. You know, he was so narrow-minded that he couldn't take anything but his own little theory, and if he had been right, then Tokyo, Japan would be where Nashville, Tennessee is now.
That's about right, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, you know, he stole maps from Toscanelli. Toscanelli maps from the Vatican, and, you know, he simply was the kind of person who was very difficult to argue with, and he had his foregone conclusions that the Indies would be where America is, and you know, he didn't want to take advice from other people and other cartographers who said, look, you know, you might be running into something, and if he hadn't run into whatever he ran into, he would have run slap into oblivion because he was 10,000 miles off course.
Yeah, or sailed right off the edge of the earth.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, it's the same thing that the Bush administration and his...
Yeah, come up with an outcome and then...
Find facts, their own version of the facts to support it, you're right.
Yeah, and then, I mean, this is Iraq, it's the Downing Street memo, it's every piece of science that they've set their hands to. I mean, I remember when they nominated a guy to the FDA, who had written a book. He was a gynecologist of some sort. He'd written a book claiming dealing with women's health issues and claiming to heal PMS with scripture.
Well, I mean,
this is what passes for a Bush appointee.
Well, it's like in the latter days of the Romanov dynasty, when Rasputin was helping the Empress make selections for ministers. Several men were put into positions of the government who couldn't read or write. So, I mean, you know, history does repeat itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, and I kind of wish the American Republic's government wasn't looking so much like the Romanovs right now.
Well, I hope it's coming to an end as far as their reign of terror is concerned. And there's just one thing I'm going to say about the whole thing. And I am just so tired of all these people like Fox News and Bush and his people just pissing in my face and telling me it's raining. You know?
Yeah, I know.
That's exactly what they're doing. And by the way, I do my part around here to sort of mitigate the local news when it comes down and filter through Fox.
I know you do. And we appreciate that. You're a guerrilla talk show observer.
Well, all I want to do, Bob, is just sit in my little house by the side of the road and be a friend to man.
And that's all we can expect, Jim.
You have a nice evening.
You too. Now, later. You see, there's a lot of truth in what Jim says, and then the reason I said that I hate that it's that we're looking so Romanov-esque right now, because you know the Romanov dynasty didn't come to a good end. Or maybe that's what Jim's aiming at. I don't, maybe. But this business, well, like I said, the Downing Street memo. Remember? Go look it up. The British attaché's words, what was it? If I got it right, the facts were being fitted, or the intelligence was being fitted around the facts. Do you remember? It was anything, but what it boiled down to was anything but an honest assessment of the situation on the ground in Iraq prior to the war. And we're finding out more and more and more with every passing day. Now, it would have been handy if Congress had been doing its damn job, wouldn't it? And we could have found this out before March of 2003, but everybody was so busy, scared to death that George Bush would call him a terrorist lover. Hey, he's a terror lover. You ever heard that phrase, lover, attached to another word in front of it and seen it used for hateful political purposes? Yeah, I think if you scratch your head and think back about 40, 50 years, you'll come up with several examples of it. It even rears its head in one of my favorite books, To Kill a Mockingbird. Atticus Walter Cunningham says you're a lover. It's an old and it's a tried and true filthy tactic. And I've even got information here in front of me to suggest that it's coming around again. The theme rolls on. It's going to get mighty ugly between now and November. Let's take a break. It's time for the news. Jump in. We got a couple of lines open if you want to. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. You got something on your mind? Bring it to the table. Especially because it's Friday, and if you bottle it up over the weekend, we know it's not going to be good. I'm Bob Kincaid. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong. Let the people marry. Tell me why are you so worried. Let me sing it to you in this song. I'm trying to be less polite.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush held a news conference this morning to push for his own version of the anti-terrorism bill. It calls for part of the Geneva Conventions to be reinterpreted so that interrogators who use tougher interrogation techniques can't be prosecuted for war crimes. Yesterday, the Senate Armed Services Committee approved an alternative bill that would protect the rights of those suspected of terrorism. Senator John McCain says reinterpreting the Geneva Conventions would allow other countries that already have poor human rights records to do the same. In Washington, officials are trying to find the source of an E. coli outbreak that has now spread to 20 states. Investigators are focusing on spinach grown and processed in California's Salinas Valley. In Ohio, Republican Representative Bob Ney pleaded guilty to federal charges, including conspiracy and making false statements in the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal. Ney received a 27-month prison sentence instead of a possible sentence of 10 years and a $500,000 fine. In Iraq, a U.S. Marine was killed today, bringing the total death toll over the last 2 days to 7. U.S. officials also report one soldier is missing. In and around Baghdad, dozens more tortured and bullet-ridden bodies of Iraqis have been found over the last 24 hours. Iraqi officials will be implementing a new security plan in the next few weeks. More security checkpoints will be installed, and trenches will be dug around Baghdad to prevent vehicles from getting around those checkpoints. More U.S. soldiers will be moved into the capital from Anbar province to help with the effort. At the Vatican, officials say that Pope Benedict did not intend to offend Muslims in comments he made earlier this week. Some consider the Pope's comments about holy wars anti-Islamic, and Turkey's Islamic-based ruling party is comparing him to Hitler. In California, drivers will no longer be able to talk on cell phones while they're driving starting in July of 2008. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and the District of Columbia have similar bans. In Southern California, firefighters have a 48-square-mile wildfire 30% contained, and crews in Washington State continue battling a nearly 7,800-acre blaze. In Montana, strong winds have helped push back a 50-square-mile fire, allowing some residents to return. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Fossilized webbed bird footprints, believed to be the oldest ever found at 110 million years old, have been discovered in South Korea. They're believed to be from the Cretaceous period of the Mesozoic era. Doctors are warning of an increase in whooping cough and recommending that anyone between the ages of 11 and 64 get vaccinated. Ford Motor announced today it plans to shut down two more plants, bringing the total number of shutdowns to 14. 10,000 salaried jobs will also be cut. Chrysler says its third-quarter loss could top $1.5 billion. That's more than twice the amount previously expected. Freddie Mac reports that rates on 30-year mortgages have fallen for the seventh time in the past 8 weeks to 6.43%. That's the lowest level in 5.5 months. British Petroleum is asking for permission to resume production at Alaska's Prudhoe Bay to conduct pipeline tests. The pipeline was shut down last month due to corrosion. Microsoft has launched its rival to Apple's iPod. Zune allows users to share music and photos wirelessly. It sells for up to $300. The price of oil dipped below $63 a barrel today after OPEC leaders decided enough oil supplies exist, at least for now. Light sweet crude settled today at $63.33. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was up 33 points, NASDAQ up 7, S&P up 4. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, you are. 5 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob. And, you know, like I said, it's Friday, so anything you want to bring to the table, you are welcome to bring. Don't be shy. Of course, that pretty much obtains all of the time. We're not that, you know, we're not, this is not egomaniacal talk radio. This is conversation radio. And what you have to say is what is important. Let's go to the phones. As a matter of fact, Luke joins us from Knoxville, Tennessee right now. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm sitting here watching the stupid guy on the fan talking.
Oh.
Got the mute on. It's the like. Oh.
Is it the press conference from earlier this morning?
Yeah, he's standing out there behind the podium. I'm not going to turn the mute off. It's like, no. Looking at him is bad enough.
Well, looking at him is enough to, you can
like
read him like a book.
Well, it's like, say, I was telling Agnes, I heard it this morning, this afternoon, and then when I got to see some parts of it, I'm like, this is even worse. I mean, it's like, I told you the other night, I said, I told you he was going for a meltdown. I just didn't figure it was going to be this quick. I mean, God, I mean, you got to figure something. There's got to be three or four people out behind each window sitting there with a hypodermic waiting for him to get back close enough to give him the jab.
Well, and I mean, if he had his druthers, he would have killed David Gregory today.
I was sitting there going, you know, I'm just curious. Have they come over to measure David Gregory for his orange jumpsuit yet? You know,
I was thinking, have they come to measure him for his sarcophagus? Because, I mean, you know, memo to David Gregory, stay off small aircraft, buddy. You know, and the thing is,
I wouldn't take elevators for a while either.
Yeah, that whole thing with well, you had such a hard time getting up, and then you asked that question.
I was thinking of that. You know what I was thinking of though? Do you remember what an old Charles Bronson film called Assassination?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Where at the end of it, Michael Ansara, he hits him, pushes him out of the elevator window. Next thing you see is the guy going up to the podium. He says, "Well, we know he had a very bad heart condition." You know?
Oh God! If looks could kill, David Gregory would have gone away in a basket.
Well, it's like I say, I'm just wondering if he was sitting there going, "Do we have snipers up on the roof?" You know, think they can swing around here for just a minute. You know.
Well, I swear he's going to have his Henry II moment any time.
Well, I thought, you know, I figured it was going to be a couple weeks down the line, but I swear, I thought we were just a few seconds away from a total meltdown. I figured he was going to signal the guard, go get him.
Well, if we get, Luke, if we get a majority back in the House and Senate, then you're going to see the real fun start. I mean, it's, you know, we talked about Captain Queeg a little bit the other night. The facial tick is going to start.
Oh, God. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, it's like I say, I'm just waiting for him to if he's got a ring on one finger, wait for him to start tapping the podium.
Click,
you know?
Click, 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 click.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like, say, this thing was, it was beyond. I mean,
well,
was,
even the clip that we already played, the business where he just sort of goes off into, and we're used to it, but now it seems to be getting a little bit more serious because we're contemplating, you know, we've got this report that's come out from the House of Representatives that I talked about briefly toward the end of the program last night, where the House Republicans have been caught lying.
Oh, the Iranian thing?
Yeah, about their ability to enrich uranium, and right now they're at 3.5%.
Stood up and said, "You're lying."
Yeah, well, very politely. They're polite people, these people who come from Vienna. They're very polite people, but yeah, you're lying.
It's like there's things in here we ain't even thought of. You know what I mean? You're not lying. You're making stuff up. I mean, we're really in a fantasy land here.
Right.
Know?
And it's only gonna get worse.
I tell you what, and the thing of it is, while we're doing this, we're ignoring things. Did you get the story I sent you about the thing over in China with the satellite photos?
Oh yeah. About people, you know, using Google Earth and things like what is it, Yahoo Maps or whatever.
I think it was Google.
Yeah, to find bizarre things on the planet.
Well, it's talking about the fact that apparently the Chinese have essentially set up a Hogan's Alley, looks like where they're getting ready to think about going over to visit Taiwan.
Well, they've set up a Hogan's Alley for Taiwan, and they've also set up a Hogan's Alley for the China-India border as well.
So it's like I say, I mean, you know, what goes on in that country, we have little idea most of the time. And it's like I say, that's I don't think they need to, you know, 100%, but I mean, they need to be watching the rest of the world. They're concentrating on one or two things. It's like, say, there's 20 things going on.
And they know that they can do anything. The Chinese know that they can do anything they want to because we are physically and financially unable to do a damn thing about it. And that is directly a function of the policies of the Bush administration, Lou.
Well, you know, I saw the article, I think I may have sent it to you, about the thing where they said, you know, that with $10 billion, they could take care of education.
Yeah.
You know, all these places where it's under. Just think how much money they have flushed down that hole that we call Iraq.
Yeah, for the cost of what we've spent in Iraq, we could literally feed the planet and educate the planet.
We could have universal health care here. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like what they've spent over there, but we might as well just went out and burned it. Then that thing, I don't know if I sent you this one, the story that came out last week, the one about the trophy RPG system that the Israelis built, that they can put on a vehicle that, like, you know, if you fire a rocket-propelled grenade, will shoot it down in the air. And the Army will not do it because, well, we've got a contract with Raytheon, and they're going to have one ready in 5 years.
No, you didn't send me send me this one, because this would have made me scream just from what you're describing already, Luke.
I'll see if I can find it.
You're telling me the Israelis have developed a system whereby they can shoot down RPGs in flight?
What it is you know what the Aegis system is on battleships?
Yeah, that throws out the chaff, and yeah.
Essentially, it's a miniature version of that you can attach to a vehicle. So if an RPG comes at it, it can fire it. It creates like a radar umbrella over the vehicle. So if something comes into that field, it'll target it. And what happens is they say they've got over a 90% success rate, the Israelis do. But the Army has a contract with Raytheon.
Who's trying to build one but hasn't succeeded yet.
Yeah, and they're starting essentially from scratch. And they say they'll have one in, 5 years. Maybe.
Breaks your heart, doesn't it?
And it's like, say, this Israeli system, I don't care if it's 50% effective.
That's 50% more effective than anything we have.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it's like, I'll send you that one. I know I thought I had. I'm sorry about that. But, one thing I heard the other day, and I saw this on the web. Somebody said, you know, the next time somebody wants to say, you know, we haven't been attacked by terror since 9/11, you go, what about those anthrax letters? Isn't that
exactly.
A terrorist attack? On U.S. soil?
Never caught that guy, did we?
He's still out there running around, but like I say, that Patriot Act got passed.
Boy, yeah, and there's the ring clicking. Yeah, click, 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 click.
But like I say, it's one of those things with him. He, when you look at him, I've got the sound off, and as I say, it's worse just looking at him. You know what I mean? Because like I say, you're sitting there watching him, and he keeps on huddling down over the podium. He keeps on wanting to lean into it, you know.
Well, I think again, this is all diagnosable stuff, Luke.
I know. You know that fella. I think you had him on. You know, the psychiatrist.
Yeah.
It's like I say, this one performance is worth it. But you put this along with the Monday night non-political speech.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, oh God, this thing. But like I say, the only thing I'm not enjoying, but the only thing that's fun about this is somebody said, where are the Democrats? They ain't getting into this. They're going to sit back and they're going to let Warner and McCain and Powell beat on this. Because the fun part, because in the minute the Democrats say anything, Rose got the commercials ready to go. They're weak on defense. You know, they're wanting to let the terrorists free. It's like, well, that's okay. We'll let the Republicans beat up on the Republicans. And we'll stand over and sell popcorn.
I know.
So it's like, I have a feeling this is Colin Powell going, you all beat me.
Well, and see,
reputation.
Yeah, there are people out there that are holding out hope against hope that Colin Powell will somehow step up for Democratic candidates or finally come out and just absolutely say that George Bush is crazier than a run-over dog. No.
But this is where Colin Powell gets his revenge, you know, for essentially Bush taking his Colin Powell's reputation and shredding it.
Yeah, and his presidential aspirations, and sure.
So I think this is where Colin gets to turn around and go, guess what?
No, wait, can we get a little conspiracy theory going on here real quick, Luke?
Sure. Which one?
If they hadn't trashed Colin Powell he might have had enough statesmanship and credibility to have a viable run in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
But since they don't want a Republican to win in 2008, so Jebby can run in 12, they had to trash Colin Powell. Boy, this is getting weird.
Well, you know what?
Somebody's going to medicate me soon.
Well, you know, I think part of it is they figure, okay, if we can get away from McCain from 2008, we can get him past 2008, he's going to be too old to run in 2012.
Well, no, they intend to get McCain stomped in 2008. That's what I've just about reached that conclusion.
They figure if they can get him past this one election, though, they aren't going to have to worry about him again.
No, right. So because that sets the whole wide world up for Jebby in 12.
So I like I say, I'm not worried about that. It's one of those things. I figure in about 16 months or 18 months, something will happen. That something will come out on Mr. McCain. You know, oh yeah. Look what papers we found, you know.
No. I have to disagree just a little bit, Luke. They're going to let him run. They're hoping.
Oh, I think they're going to let him run.
They're going to let him run. Advertise. They're hoping he'll get the nomination.
Yeah.
Because the Bush family has this pathological need to put the shiv in John McCain.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean. I think they're going to wait till it gets like about this time in about 2 years when it's all you know, said and done and they're on the run to the White House. And then I think they're going to let something loose on John, you know, something that's just going to absolutely just torpedo him.
Yeah, it'll be after his nomination.
Yeah,
that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He'll be nominated, and it's past the convention, and like I say, just about this time in about 2 years, you know, you're about six weeks out from the election, and something's going to happen. But oh, one thing, if anybody wants to know, they haven't shown it yet, but tonight Mr. Oberman is repeating his commentary from Monday night.
Oh, the may
the hole in the ground.
Yeah, may this nation forgive you, Mr. Bush.
Mm-hmm. So they're showing it sometime. I assume probably at the end of the show. Just wanted to warn anybody in case they wanted to get a tape of it because it was really good.
Program the TiVo, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just before I ran over it, I said okay. Get it on the TV or something.
All right, appreciate it, Luke.
All
listen,
right,
you have yourself
good.
A great weekend.
You
all right,
Bob.
Take care.
Bye.
And do we break now, Agnes, or do we go straight on? Okay, Susan calling from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Well, the mountain hasn't blown up yet.
Well, you know, that's another good day above the ground.
Right. So I figure if the Earth don't stop rotating, don't sweat the small stuff.
Exactly.
You mentioned the you know, things getting ugly.
Yeah.
Okay, anytime they start pulling their little tricks, I suggest you refer them to Google and have them put in to Google Republicans plus pedophiles and see what you get. It will knock your socks off. It's a list as long as your arm.
Oh, I've seen that before, yeah.
And it just blows you away. They're pedophiles, crooks. it's the most incredible list I've ever seen.
And it's sickening too. And the funny thing is that you know I was talking about this media study from the FCC a little bit ago. Yeah, you can Google that up, Susan. When was the last time you saw that mentioned on any nightly newscast?
You ain't gonna. Even though it's utter fact, these people have been convicted in criminal court, and some of the most they were. I'm not sure if they've managed to avoid being listed as registered sex offenders or not, but they should be. I've got a few other little things I could recommend for them, but I don't think it's quite legal to do over the air, so I won't say it. I did want to ask your listeners to do something for me.
Okay.
Gordon Smith is one of the senators of Oregon.
Okay.
Now, he has indicated, his office has indicated to me that the senator just adores that piece of doublespeak that Spectre came up with.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And he's all for it. So, please, people, can you go to the Senate website and give this Yahoo hell?
Gordon Smith.
He's one of the senators. He's the junior senator from Oregon. He's a Republican. And he's a freeper of the First Order. And I mean,
How long has he been in office, Susan?
Not nearly as long as Wyden. I'm on medication, so my dates are hazy.
I understand.
But he represents a district that is mostly conservative farmers and stuff like that, I have a feeling that he's going to be in, be having problems because these farmers are starting to get hit really bad.
Well, yeah, as long as there's farmers to object, because a lot of time anymore, and I mean, I don't know how it is in Oregon, Susan, but what we used to mean by farmers don't exist anymore.
Well, these are Eastern Oregon dryland wheat farmers mostly.
Okay.
And
so they haven't been absorbed by Archer
quite.
Daniels Midland or any of those?
Not quite yet. And the one last thing.
Okay.
Make you smile. If you want a real laugh, come to the Pacific Northwest, Seattle or Portland, when we've had a quarter inch of snow. Especially the entire town shuts down. Seattle's got those great big hills.
Mm-hmm.
People just abandon their cars.
And just hope they don't slide.
The cops come in, block off the streets, and, you know, they leave the cars and leave because nobody up here knows how to drive in snow.
I wouldn't be surprised because, again, there's not a lot there, just like there wasn't a lot where I grew up. And, you know, in areas that do have snow, they buy salt trucks and they buy salt and they have cinders and they get out. And we do a pretty good job of it around here.
Well, that's just the thing. We do get a fair amount of snow in the winter, but nobody's ever bothered to learn.
Do they have the trucks and so forth? I mean,
yeah, they have the chemicals and the salt and stuff like that. It's just that I think it's something to do with the Pacific Northwest mindset. You know, you just it's kind of an undeclared holiday here or something. But Portland gets something called silver thaws. They're actually ice storms,
mm-hmm.
And you get cars literally skating across the freeways. You know, and it's hilarious.
Well, that's what we'd see. I'd see growing up is, you know, you'd see people who finally got enough traction to get going, and then they'd figure that they could drive at, you know, regular highway speeds.
Yeah, 60 miles an hour, and then the smart people who know how to drive, they're creeping along at maybe 10, 15 miles an hour, and then they get sworn at by the people going.
I know. Yeah, I know it well. I've been the recipient of that swearing, Susan.
You and me both. And it's always a gas.
I'll never
get in the ditch later on.
Oh, I'll never forget the night that our son was decided to be born. It was Christmas night, 1995. A foot of snow on the ground and no trucks because the state of West Virginia was not going to pay triple time to the state highway crew to come out and clear snow on Christmas night.
Oh yeah.
And so we got in the four-wheel drive pickup truck, put it in low, and started creeping over the hills and hollers out to the interstate. We got out to Interstate 79, and we're still creeping and crawling because you can't tell where the road ends and the median starts.
Uh-huh.
And there's still daylight in the sky. And this guy passes us in a Ford Ranger on the, you know, in the left lane. Through this snow, he's doing every bit of 60 miles an hour to my 15.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
And I looked at Agnes and I said, that guy is going to wreck. He's crazy. And we had one of those early generation cell phones. It was one of those bag phones.
Mm-hmm.
That you had to flip the antenna up. It was heavy. And I had the thing turned on because in case we'd need it to dial 911 or anything. And sure enough, I said, about the time that I got he's going to wreck out of my mouth, he had gone maybe 200 yards ahead of us and just completely lost control, began corkscrewing, went into the side of the mountain, bounced back across the highway, and did a full 360-degree flip in the median and wound up sitting up on his tires.
Yeah.
And I looked at Agnes and I said, I'm going to call 911, and, you know, I bet he's drunk. Because nobody goes through something like that and winds up, you know, God looks out for fools, drunks, and children.
Right, and he probably was.
Yeah, you know, it's Christmas night. Time to go home.
Yeah.
And go
with eggnog. And
yeah, exactly.
Holiday cheer inside. Yeah, I think he's more crazy. Anyway.
Well,
have a real nice day.
You have a wonderful weekend. I look forward to hearing from you again. And, you know, just if the mountain starts smoking, what is that? Is that Mount Hood?
Mount St. Helens.
Oh, that's Mount St. Helens. Oh, geez, of course, yeah. I've still got a grudge against Mount St. Helens. I was supposed to go on an archaeological dig after my junior year in high school in the eastern Oregon desert. And Mount St. Helens erupted and paid to all of that, and I wound up working at the Quickie Mart instead.
Well, being a frustrated archaeologist, paleontologist, I can understand how you feel.
Yeah, it really did upset me. I had to wait a couple of years to go do archaeology somewhere else. Great minds think alike. I love archaeology. Have you ever, Susan, have you ever read anything by Lauren Isley?
I'm not sure.
If you get a chance, run by the public library and have them dredge up a copy of The Night Country by Lauren Isley, E-I-S-E-L-E-Y, I believe. Because if you're a frustrated archaeologist, this will absolutely speak to your soul.
Oh, one thing.
Yes.
One you might consider getting as a guest,
mm-hmm.
the guy who wrote Bush on the Couch. You want psychological advice?
Oh, he can take him apart. I've thought about that from time
to
time.
That's a scary book.
It is. It absolutely is, and it's a very believable book. I think the man is certifiably insane. But nobody's willing to take the constitutional steps to declare him incompetent.
I agree. I think he's cracked.
Wide open. I mean, the video today, all you got to do is watch it, Susan.
I did. You know, it made me want to go find Thorazine and, you know.
Well, the cocaine jaw grinding, that was going on again today.
Oh, God. He's been snorting again.
And the let me finish. And I wasn't sure watching the video whether he was saying that to David Gregory or whether he was saying that to the voice in his head, you know, from the little black box in his suit. I didn't know.
There is one thing you have to give George Bush. He is a walking, talking, perfect example and a wonderful argument for birth control.
I got in real trouble the first time several years ago when I said that George Bush is the best argument that Roe versus Wade was decided a generation too late. Oh, the hell I caught.
Well.
But it's true, isn't it?
I blame you.
Susan, thanks so much, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, it's time for, we're halfway through, and you know what happens next? We're going to take a little break. It's time for an update from Workers Independent News. Always one of my favorite features. Want to jump in on this last program before the weekend hits us squarely between the eyes? I encourage you to. Oh, by the way, yeah, and it's the weekend, and I'll be watching some college football. When you're rooting for LSU, what is it? G-E-A-U-X? Yeah, go G-E-A-U-X. Go Tigers. I need Auburn to take a powder out of the top five this weekend. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. But something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The UAW has agreed with Ford Motor Company on a buyout offer to 75,000 UAW Ford workers. Ford has lost market share and is closing factories. These buyouts offer a variety of retirement incentives for workers to leave Ford. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger says UAW members are once again stepping up to make hard choices under difficult circumstances. UAW Vice President Bob King says the UAW is trying to make sure that these reductions in the Ford workforce are voluntary. More than 1,000 workers in one Pennsylvania county have been told to prepare for a strike. Jesse Russell has more.
Workers in Westmoreland County are represented by the Service Employees International Union. The union and the county have been in negotiations since late last year, with their contract expiring at the beginning of this year. Last month, in an overwhelming vote, the workers rejected the most recent contract offer and empowered union leadership to call a strike if a new agreement cannot be reached. According to the union, that walkout could come as early as September 26. Negotiations have stymied on issues concerning insurance and compensation. The union represents emergency dispatchers, road crews, and courthouse workers, as well as others. The county says it has made its final offer and is prepared for the possibility of a strike.
Flight attendants at Mesaba Airlines have won a federal court victory that overturns an earlier decision allowing Mesaba to throw out its union contracts. Mesaba management had threatened to impose a 19.4% wage and benefit cut. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, called the court win a monumental victory for Mesaba workers and employees everywhere. The union says now it's time for Mesaba to drop the litigation and bargain fairly with its flight attendants. American Rights at Work, formed in 2004 to protect, advance, and restore workers' rights to form unions, has launched a new website exposing an anti-union propaganda network. Kim Freeman is communications director for American Rights at Work.
This powerful, well-financed, well-coordinated, but virtually unknown web of organizations and individuals are playing an enormous role in fostering the climate to severely limit workers' abilities to form unions.
Garbage is still piling up in Sacramento, but the county and workers are talking again, so while the sanitation strike will continue there, residents can get ready to stop holding their breaths. The last county offer includes a bigger pay raise. Here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
If you think tossing back a few drinks after work is draining your wallet, think again. A new study published in the Journal of Labor Research and Reason found that drinkers earn on average 10 to 14% more at their jobs than non-drinkers. And men who hit the bars at least once a month, they tend to bring in 7% more in additional pay. Report co-author Edward Stringham suggested that social drinking helps build social capital.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back. I'm Bob. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is Head On. And we welcome a new caller all the way from Germany, Angelica. Welcome to the program. Thank you for calling.
Bob. Hi.
How are you?
Do you allow people with voices like mine?
Oh, absolutely.
Laryngitis, you know, I'm sorry.
A little honey and lemon and you'll be fine.
You think so?
I hope so.
Okay, so I can't talk much, but, you know, I'll try to make it short. I just wanted to say about your show yesterday about the mountaintop mining,
mm-hmm.
that removal. That was just so horrible to hear. You had me in tears. So I just wanted to for you to give out the link, maybe.
There are several places. Yes, thank you. There are several places you can go.
I found one.
Yeah.
That I thought was very good.
MountainJusticeSummer.org.
Exactly. .org. Yeah.
Right. And there's that. There's OVEC, OHVEC.org, and CRMW.net. All of those things have very straightforward photographs showing what mountaintop removal does to Appalachia. And, you know, I got to thinking about it because we corresponded by email. And I went to look at the region of Germany where you are, and what I saw made me think of what we have here.
Yeah, but you didn't say that they're just thawing off the tops of your mountains. You didn't mention that. I'm just shocked. I'm absolutely shocked.
Well,
I can't believe this is happening.
Please, if you don't mind, do us a little favor. Where you are, tell people what's happening here. Because
I will contact Der Spiegel online. You know, I listen to that. I mean, I read that every day. So, I'm absolutely shocked about it.
You wouldn't expect that to happen in the United States, would you?
No. China, yeah. You know, where they building the that big dam there. You know, where they just relocated hundreds and thousands of people, if not millions.
Right, the Three Gorges
Dam.
Dam's
going to give away, you know, sooner or later, and then it'll flood the whole region. So, but this is, to me, is in the same league.
Well, it is, and the same level of disaster, and it's already happened here. We've had, and there, when you get into it, Angelica, and you begin to study what they're doing and the potential for disaster, it is more than horrifying, because it's not just the mountaintop removal; it's what happens as a result of the mountaintop removal. It's the injection of toxic sludge into old coal mines, and those things blow the sides of mountains out. That's what happened in Martin County, Kentucky in 2001. All of this stuff is disaster waiting to happen. The Buffalo Creek disaster took place in 1972 and killed maybe a couple of hundred people. If one of these multi-billion liter sludge dams gives way, we're talking about killing an entire region of West Virginia.
And that to me is just inconceivable. I can't believe this is happening in the United States. I really can't. I mean, you know, just the bare, you know, like in, for instance, in Chile, they're growing wine now. What they're doing, they're taking the forest down, you know, that they're supposed to hold the land on the hills, and they're having more and more landslides there, and the villages are going to get, you know, below are going to get flooded.
Buried.
Mud, you know, mudslides.
And of course, that's what happens here as a result also of the strip mining practices.
Exactly. I saw a picture. I couldn't believe it. This is like a wasteland, no trees, nothing, and then people living there. I said, what is this, you know? And you, of course, a hill or a mountain won't be able to hold its shape. It'll come down.
It absolutely will. Everything in that ecosystem dies.
Yes,
I mean,
and the
from
people with it, and I just can't believe it. And they have apparently no place to go. I was talking to, writing to Nanette, and where do they go?
Well, and why should they have to?
But to save their lives, apparently, you know.
Yeah, there's no escape route down there. If one of these things goes, there is absolutely no escape route, because, you know, being fluid, it's going to seek its own level. It's going to do what water and fluid-based things do. And there's no way to, because of the mountains.
It's happening in Italy, you know, you have, in Tuscan Valley, you have already had mudslides where just beautiful homes are just coming down, you know, and it's happening in California, where people are just building too much, where actually trees are supposed to be, because they're what's holding this fabric together of nature and landscape, and you can't just take that down.
No, you can't.
I stopped buying Chilean. You call it
Chileans?
Wine. You know, I don't condone that, so I don't buy it. They should have trees there and natural forest and not wine. You know.
Right. Well, and the thing is, they've done it. They're doing it off the Chilean coast as well. If you go into restaurants, you'll see Chilean sea bass.
Yeah.
That's been over-harvested almost to the point of extinction.
They put one fish into the Lake Victoria, and that particular fish, they didn't know it was predator fish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that particular fish that seems to be very people like in Europe like to eat it. So, that fish ate up all of the other fish that were for the local fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen pictures to where in Victoria, you know, South Africa, for the locals, all they have is to get they have the scraps, something that we would just throw in the garbage, and this is what they have, you know, for themselves to eat. And this is what they live on, and the rest goes to Europe.
Well,
it's delay, you know.
We started the program by talking about humanity's manipulation of its living space, and it's when you manipulate it without regard to long-term consequences that you really begin to sow the seeds of disaster.
Yeah, but where does it end? Where, you know, I mean, this globalization, it spreads, you know, not just goods, but also the horror across the world, you know.
It does.
I see it, you know. And it just started off with, you know, your mountains there, and you just don't mess when you have beautiful countryside like that. You should be proud of it, and you should not destroy it, and you should have regard for the people that live there and not endanger their lives.
I agree wholeheartedly. Unfortunately, a lot of this has been made just exponentially worse by virtue of the so-called clarification of rules. That's what the Bush administration does here. They don't change laws. They say they're clarifying. When George Bush was talking today about trying to expand his ability to torture people, he said, "We're clarifying the Geneva Conventions." Now, I've read the Geneva Conventions, and they seem pretty clear to me. But they don't need clarification. But that's the same thing that they did with mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
They clarified the Clean Water Act to declare that all of the stuff that they pushed down over the sides and into the streams, burying the streams, they just clarified the rule to say that that's not pollution.
Uh-huh.
And with something as simple
words,
as that.
You just lower some standards and it's not all of a sudden.
Right. It's like magic.
Beautiful.
So, you know, it makes it all the more important that we get...
When you have ultimate power, you're able to do this, apparently.
Well, exactly. And this isn't the only place that's happening in this country. The great pits of Wyoming and Montana, it's not so much a matter of blowing holes in the tops off of mountains as it is blowing great gaping holes in the earth that also poison their watersheds as well. We're doing everything in our power here in North America, Angelica, to kill where we live.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of that. The Soviets did a lot of that during the era of the Soviet Union. They polluted without regard to their environment, and look at the price they're paying. Look at what Chernobyl did to all of Europe. And we didn't learn a blessed thing from that.
No.
Because there's money to be had.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chernobyl, you know, there's, I guess, hundreds of those power plants just, you know, waiting all across the world, waiting to explode, as far as I'm concerned.
And
they're very unsafe.
They are. And, you know, there's a nuclear submarine fleet. We learned that. With the submarine disaster of, what, 5-6 years ago in the North Sea or in the Baltic Sea, when a reactor went to the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, was that 5 years ago?
I believe it was.
And
it's all because of a lack of foresight and a lack of caring, because, you know, in the long run, it's mostly poor people that get hurt.
Yeah.
Nobody's mansion in southern West Virginia is going to be impacted by mountaintop removal, because nobody, you know, the guy who's in charge of the company that's doing it.
Yeah, he lives far away.
Yeah, he lives far away.
In some gated community, most likely.
Which
brings me to another subject, coming to, you know, gated communities, which I think is just as obscene is having golf courses in deserts.
Well, that's silly. That's just silly.
It's really obscene, you know, and because the Colorado River, as far as I'm concerned, is about to run dry, and then they're pumping millions, or did at least, of gallons of water out of it to fill these fountains of in Las Vegas.
Oh, don't yes.
Be out on this.
Yeah, Palm Springs and...
No, those fountains of Bellagio.
Oh, yeah, the Bellagio,
yeah.
The Caesar's Palace.
Water.
Oh, gosh.
For that. That is, and a lot of that, I understand, was under the table, and people weren't and didn't know how much water they were pumping into those basins out of the Colorado River.
Well, it's
which will run dry, and then they're planting palm trees all over, and palm trees are very trees are very thirsty.
Oh yes, they are.
You know,
and it's worldwide. I saw photographs. Someone sent them to me not too long back, asking, you know, do you ever wonder why you have to pay what you have to pay for gasoline?
Yeah.
And this was a photograph, I think, from the United Arab Emirates. It showed
I saw it today on Spiegel.
Yes. No. This was an indoor ski slope.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, they showed it in construction, and then inside, in the middle of Arabia, for all intents and purposes.
Well, I saw today in Spiegel online, they had these humongous golf courses in Dubai, I believe,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, I mean, right in the middle of the desert, I mean, lush and green, and people, you know, they have to scrape for water in this region and don't have any for the most part, and but the lawn gets it, so you know I that's just upsetting to me.
It's always a certain class of people who pull this off.
Yeah.
You know, the poor people don't have nice green lawns in the United Arab Emirates, and we tend to forget that Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, they all have poor people
yeah.
in their populations.
Yeah.
And it's
much so. They have very low standards, even though, you know, we all thought otherwise because of their oil money, but not so at all. So,
no, yeah. not at all.
And but well, like I say, you know, eventually Las Vegas won't have any more water to, you know, to supply the golf courses. And in Arizona, that's another thing, you know, just one golf course after another, all these retirement communities, you know, we're probably... Those coal mining bosses live.
Right,
at
exactly.
golf. But maybe, you know, this isn't going to be forever either. I can foresee
well, no, this
that
is,
already.
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that ruins in the desert are made out of. And
yes.
I mentioned a little bit earlier having fooled around with archaeology. And I see through I see with a different perspective. And I look at things around me and I wonder... what will this look like in 1,000 years? Because I was so moved as a teenager, I got to take a spring break trip to Rome with my Latin class.
Mm-hmm.
And it amazed me and really made me think when we went to the Forum and it was pointed out that the level of where ancient Rome stood is 13 feet below street level Rome now. And that really makes you think about, you know, what are we building here? What will last? What will survive? You know, you can read if you see the Pantheon in Rome, you can see that touching inscription from Caesar Augustus to Marcus Agrippa that goes across the top of the building, and that is literally carved in stone. The same thing with the inscriptions from the Bible inside St. Peter's. But we live in a culture where all of our writing, the most permanent of our writing, is on paper. And the least permanent of our writing is on a little silver disc. And I ask myself from time to time, 1,000 years from now, if some culture digs up one of those discs, what are they going to think of it? What are they going to think it is? Is it a religious object? Is it a decoration? And they may never even stop to think that the entire sum of our knowledge is contained on those things. And it scares me because I like the idea of some level of permanence in civilization. Because we may well be killing off civilization even as we speak.
Do you think then this piece of writing may not survive either, or there may not be anybody there to read it? Or
well, that's a distinct possibility as well. I mean, we have reached a point in time. You know, I grew up through the tail end of the Cold War. And there was always the possibility that there were going to be nukes in the sky at any time. And certainly where you live, it was a very real and terrifying possibility based on your proximity to the Soviet Union.
Well, we're not that close. We're close to France.
But no. But, I mean, you're closer than we are.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And from that moment forward, the idea that we could wipe out humanity, you know, we had enough weapons to kill humanity several times over.
Yeah.
And now the Cold War is over, but we're finding out that not necessarily through intentional conduct via nuclear warfare, but by virtue of even something as simple as gross negligence.
Well, or...
That we can do it.
Or criminal conduct.
Or right? Criminal conduct, exactly.
Yeah. Because, I mean, these weapons are still there, and there are people having access to them that shouldn't be, and that are in need of money. They don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And they need money, so they pack up certain things in suitcases and sell it, and there's always somebody there that buys it for, you know, and that's, I don't know what's going to come of that, but that's a whole different subject.
It is indeed.
It's not pleasant to think about.
No, it's frightening. It is absolutely frightening. And I wonder, you know, I wonder from time to time, I get a little bit depressed, and I wonder if we have the, if we who are on the correct side of this debate have the knowledge and the wherewithal and the stomach and the determination to make ourselves heard above the din of the mass media. I mean, I don't know what television is like where you are, but I can tell you that it keeps this population pretty well in line.
Yeah, you mean the TV? Well, we have very very good educational TV still, and good, you know, investigative reporting.
Mm-hmm.
We have a show every day just about on some, you know, subject. So.
Well, it's a lot harder to get the American people to watch something like that.
Yeah.
As long as Dancing with the Stars is on.
Well, we have that, too.
Right.
So, but that's on the private channel. But then we have, you know, what you would call public channel, three of or several of those. And they're very high quality, I think, you know, and well, more than three. And then, we're... I should be watching more, but I haven't been because I'm listening to your station.
Well, I'm so glad you are.
I don't know what to do. I'm not getting any work done. It's almost 3 o'clock here. I'm sitting here and wide awake all of a sudden again. I should be in bed. I should be watching, you know, educational TV. I'm not. So.
Well, we apologize.
I found you.
And I am too.
You took me out of my morning from Malloy.
Oh, well, we're all waiting for Mike to come back.
Yeah, you know, that was kind of a good thing that I found you. So, and one thing, you know, because you're always looking for a name for him,
mm-hmm.
for Malloy, but I think not for Malloy. Good God, I mean for Bush.
Yes.
And I think that his name should be Butthead.
That
because
works.
If you've ever looked at, you know, watched Beavis and Butthead,
mm-hmm.
and the Butthead part looks like George Bush.
And the and the snicker,
like him, right. And he, you know, yeah. Giggles like him. And Butthead.
He is.
From the profile, same nose, same. I think Butthead must have been created after George Bush.
It could very well have been because it is. It's
the level of intellect and everything from Butthead. So I think that's what I call him.
It works for me.
It works for me.
Angelica, thank you so much, and have
You're
a wonderful
welcome.
Morning and a great weekend.
Yeah. Now can I go to bed?
If you must.
Thank you.
Good night.
Yeah. Good night to you too. Bye bye. Tschüss.
Tschüss. What a wonderful conversation. What a wonderful community. When I say we, I don't mean necessarily the Agnes, me, the people behind the microphones here, although we're part of it. What a wonderful community we are building. The people in the chat room, the people on the message boards, you guys communicate with each other via email. You help each other. You work through problems together. This is so much more than any media undertaking I've ever seen could possibly be. What a thrilling phone call for me. And to know that, you know, to know that there are people far, far away who care about things that are happening here in this little region. Angelica mentioned gated communities and McMansions. That's happening. You know, we got the mountaintop removal, and the mountains that they're not removing, they're going to, in the right smack dab on the edge of a national park, they've decided it's time to make a little bit more money, and they've got a whole bunch of the New River Gorge carved up into lots for McMansions. And we're talking about postage stamp sized lots on the edge of the New River Gorge that are going for $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000, that are very much like the houses that she mentioned in California and Chile, sitting right on the straight up and down part of the mountain. And through some engineering marvel, we're going to put houses there because it'll be a fabulous view. And what a fabulous drop when the mountain slumps. Because all of the, you know, bear in mind, please, this is nothing new. All of the mountains along the New River Gorge are absolutely chock full of coal mines. Old, abandoned coal mines on the south side of the New River Gorge Bridge, which is a magnificent engineering marvel. And for which, you know, that's the good side of engineering. They were pouring the footers for the bridge because, you know, of course, it's 876 feet in the air, 3 feet short of the height of the Eiffel Tower from the deck of the bridge to the river below. And so it doesn't have any supports. It's a single arch span. It's supported only by its footers on either side of the gorge. On the south, in a high wind, it's engineered to sway 7 feet from side to side, and that just makes Agnes so happy. I'm a little bit mean. We were in the minivan one day going across, and it was a traffic jam during bridge day, and the kids picked up on it because I was just sort of rocking there in my seat, and the nature of a minivan is such that if you rock in your seat, you can rock the whole vehicle. It's Ford. And Agnes looks up and goes, "What's wrong?" I said, "I don't know. I think the bridge is swaying. There may be too much weight on it." "Huh?" And then the kids start rocking and get the van going real good. And that's when we realized it was time to stop teasing Mommy. But no, on the south side of the bridge, when they poured the footers there, they hit an abandoned coal mine. The ground just broke through where they were pouring the concrete, and they had to pour concrete for something I forget, 29 continuous hours. Because if they had stopped at any time, there would have been a seam, and the bridge foundation would not have been safe. Round the clock, concrete pouring. And guess what? It's like that all up and down the gorge. And land can slump and does slump at any time. And whoops the McMansion. But it's a classic case of, what is it? More dollars than cents. More dollars than cents. How many times has more dollars than cents done people in? How many times has more dollars than cents done in other people? You know, if you want, I'm a real kind of mind my own business type. If you're so stupid that you, then you've got so much money that you can afford to go out and be really dumb about it, and you hurt yourself, okay. Kind of like riding up and down the road without a helmet on a motorcycle or a four-wheeler or whatever. But when you start hurting other people, that's where society has a reasonable right to step in and say no. If you go to crmw.net, if you go to ovec.org, if you go to mountainjusticesummer.org, you'll see what happens with more dollars than cents. And you'll see who gets ultimately hurt. I encourage you to have a look. So we'll be coming back after our top of the hour news. We've got another hour left for you to get your licks in before the weekend is fully upon us. 877-443-2366. Is the phone number. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid. The bulldozer bury the past, and the low country thinks she cannot swim. The dog-
One night they put a price on the sunset, and that got the whole world sick. They rose from the grave.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington this morning, President Bush again pushed for his own version of the anti-terrorism bill, saying time is running out in Congress. The bill calls for part of the Geneva Conventions to be reinterpreted so that interrogators who use tougher techniques on terror suspects can't be prosecuted for war crimes. The Senate Armed Services Committee approved a rival bill yesterday that would protect the rights of terror suspects. Senator John McCain says reinterpreting the Geneva Conventions would set a bad precedent for other countries that already have poor human rights records. In Washington, officials are trying to find the source of an E. coli outbreak that has now spread to 20 states. It's already killed one person and sickened nearly 100 others. Officials suspect bagged spinach, but have not yet determined the source. In Washington, Republican Representative Bob Ney has made a plea deal with the Justice Department. He pleaded guilty today to conspiracy and making false statements in the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal in exchange for a lighter sentence. He'll spend 27 months in prison and faces a fine of up to $500,000. In Iraq, a U.S. Marine was killed today, bringing the total death toll over the last 2 days to 7. U.S. officials also report one soldier is missing. In and around Baghdad, police have found dozens more tortured and bullet-ridden bodies of Iraqis over the last 24 hours. More than 100 people have been killed over the last 2 days, either in attacks or tortured and dumped in various locations. Muslim leaders are calling on Pope Benedict XVI to apologize for comments he made this week in Germany. In a lecture, he said spreading faith through violence is unreasonable and incompatible with God's wishes for peace. The Vatican released a statement that said he regretted offending Muslims and blamed the media for misusing quotes. In Japan, the cult leader who masterminded a nerve gas attack on Tokyo's subway system in 1995 has been sentenced to death. 12 others will also be executed in connection with the plot, which killed 12 and injured thousands. In Montana, strong winds have helped push back a 50-square-mile fire, allowing some residents who'd evacuated the area to return. And in California, firefighters have a 48-square-mile wildfire 30% contained. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business and science news is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Astronauts fixed a radiator and conducted an experiment today on their third and final spacewalk, the return to Earth, on Wednesday. Ford announced today it's shutting down two more plants, bringing the total number of shuttered plants to 14. 10,000 salary jobs will also be cut. Ford will also stop paying dividends until 2009, the year it expects to return to profitability. That's 1 year later than expected. Statistics show that the U.S. experienced the worst heat this summer in 70 years. From June 1st to August 31st, the average temperature was 74.5 degrees. High temps could continue through the winter. Doctors say anyone between the ages of 11 and 64 should get vaccinated against the whooping cough, which is on the rise. A judge has barred Northwest flight attendants from striking or taking any other job actions until a bankruptcy court makes a decision. The flight attendants union plans to appeal. British Petroleum is asking for permission to resume production at Alaska's Prudhoe Bay to conduct pipeline tests. And over a two-day period last week, Chinese police shut down more than 300 Internet sites and tens of thousands of items they deemed to be hazardous information. One official said some of the shuttered websites sold guns and explosives. Light sweet crude settled at $63.33. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 33 points, NASDAQ up 7, S&P up 4. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Five minutes past the hour. Downhill to the end of the week. In the last conversation, we touched on several environmental issues. And of course, in the Quality News Network newscast that you just heard, remarks upon the fact that, yes, indeed, it's been hotter here in the last 5 years than it has in the last 70. And of course, the Luddites and the naysayers and the apologists for industrial pollutants, they say, well, these are just cyclical things. I mean, hell, it's not like we got any way to measure temperatures from the year 1400. But of course we do. Massive studies of sea ice, massive studies of tree rings. You can literally see the heavy rainfall and the low rainfall years, the high heat years, the low heat years, just by looking at scientific data. Oh, there's the problem. See, they're relying on that heathen science again. But you can see these kinds of things. And you can measure these kinds of things. So we know that it's getting hotter. We know that the winter patterns, the way winter hits us, is different from how it was. Yeah, but see, they had a little ice age back in 1500s, these things just come and go. Man ain't got nothing to do with it. Yeah, I've heard that argument put forward. But how can you say, if you just look at the population density of humankind on Earth, and you look at what humankind was able to do in the way of manipulating its environment in centuries, nay, millennia past, you still have to come to the conclusion that there is more junk in the air now. Well, what about when a volcano erupts, Bob? See, I know, I'm setting up a straw man, I know. But that's the kind of stuff that you get out there. Volcanoes do it all the time. What about all that methane gas going into the atmosphere from cattle? Remember that? And yeah, huge nasty runoffs from industrial chicken plants. And you realize the scope of things when you think about places like the Smithfield Kill Plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina, where the Smithfield Justice Project is operating, trying to organize the workers there. There's 5,000 workers. I mean, just sit and think about this for a minute and think about what the environment must be like in the areas around Tar Heel, North Carolina. Because, you see, 32,000 hogs. And I know that these are the kind of numbers that it's tough to wrap your head around. But in Tar Heel, North Carolina, 32,000 hogs per day. 7 days a week, maybe 363 days a year. 32,000 hogs are slaughtered. On two shift lines, at a rate of, well, you do the math. I'm no good at it. 32,000 hogs are slaughtered by 5,000 human beings over the course of, two shifts, I think. maybe three, not sure. 32,000 per day. Now, those hogs didn't just come into existence. They came off of industrial hog farms. Those hog farms yield pollution that you and I don't... You ever been near a pig pen? Especially a poorly kept one? I know for a fact these things exist in northwest Alabama, not too far south of where I grew up. And there are entire lakes of porcine fecal material. Kind of like small-scale versions of the sludge lakes in what used to be the hollers of southern West Virginia. Poisonous, poisonous from start to finish and top to bottom. You can smell them from a mile away. And, you know, that's one factory supplying America's pork needs. And if you extrapolate, if you just sit and you take your head and you extrapolate out what that means about the level of consumption in the United States, it'll make your head hurt. And it'll make you wonder how we get from one day to the next and one year to the next without utter collapse. And it's another good reason to go and buy Michael Pollan's book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, A Natural History of Four Meals, because he lays it out in very easy-to-grasp terms, these things that are rather complex. We are teetering on the brink of something awful. I had a friend who called the program back in the days of Beckley Terrestrial Radio who talked about massive paradigm shifts. It was his way of not saying utter collapse of civilization and total disaster. But I've come to the, you know, I'm not telling you to go buy the vacuum sealers and go hide in a cave or anything. This is a world we have to live in, and we talk about living through fear and living without fear and dealing with fear. But we've got to pay attention to what's going on, because there are people who will do anything, mostly to where we live, not where they live. They'll do anything to where we live as long as they think there's a damn dollar in it. I've got something from the BBC here. It's been sitting on my desk for a couple of days now. You may have already seen this. A NASA satellite has documented startling changes in Arctic sea ice cover between 2004 and 2005. The extent of perennial ice, think ice which remains all year around, the extent of perennial ice is down by 14% from 2004 to 2005, losing an area the size of Pakistan or Turkey. Summer ice is shrinking by about 0.7% per year. There's a possibility the changes may relate to what they call unusual wind patterns from 2005. But they also acknowledged that rising temperatures in the Arctic could also be a factor. September 2005 saw the lowest recorded area of ice cover since 1978, when satellite records became available. And see, to oppose this hard, rock-solid science, what you get from the other side is speculation.
Well, that just means that we didn't take a picture of it. There's probably been a time on Earth when the entire poles was nothing but water. That's how hot it was.
Well, okay. Not when humans lived there. Not as long as we've been here. Uh-uh. Nope. I mean, sea levels have been lower. We know that. They were low enough to create the Bering Land Bridge between Siberia and what is now Alaska. We understand that a whole lot of the settlement patterns of the earliest human occupation of the Americas is probably underwater where the coasts are now. And there are cyclical changes to Earth, whether it be the precession of the equinoxes to the change of the seasons. We, you know, thanks to science, we do all understand all that, and we think, and we don't think that the god of summer dies once a year and comes back in the spring anymore. We're pretty well over that, and nobody has to go down to Hades and rescue spring, every March in the Northern Hemisphere. We're done with that. We've gotten past that. We've got science. But we are beset with companies that think that they're going to go broke and suddenly have to start eating like the rest of us and give up their hummingbirds, tongues, appetizers if somehow we start taking care of the planet. And of course they're not. I mean, this is the same crowd that hollers, "Oh, Jesus, business will collapse in the United States if we raise the minimum wage by a quarter." And they've done it from the inception of the minimum wage every time the minimum wage has gone up. Oh, God, it's going to bring on economic collapse. And it doesn't. And they prosper. Dadgum, the richest of the rich got even richer under Bill Clinton, even when they were taxed at a fairer rate. But they screamed. They screamed holy, bloody murder. Because they thought they were being imposed upon. We talk from time to time about trying to rein in campaign financing in this country, and we talk from time to time about things like corporate personhood and the fact that we can't get a handle on our campaign finance practices because the Supreme Court made people out of corporations. And every time we try to rein in the money that they use buying elections, like, "Well, Jesus, we're people. We got civil rights just like people do here at Really Big Corporation of America. And you're stymieing our free speech when you say that we can't buy us a Congress or two." And so our listener, my good friend Tosh, writes to me. He says, "It's easy. Tell corporations they get a choice. If they want to be taxed like corporations and get these huge tax breaks, then they're corporations and they're not people. If they want to be people like you and me, then they get taxed on a personal basis. Make the choice." And see, that's so fair. But if you propose that in Congress, they would be in court the minute that the bill became law, saying, "Well, this is a violation of our civil rights. I mean, we're people, but we're better than people, you understand. Because we're corporations and we don't die." They really don't. And this is the complex knot of global cancer that we're up against. This is the stuff that's going to kill us. And you see, our betters think that it's not going to kill them. They think that they'll always be able to survive, even if the poor get killed off. Maybe they're right. I don't know. But, you know, here it is. The latest study from scientists led by Song Nim of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California measures something slightly different from the extent of summer ice cover, the extent of perennial ice cover. Perennial is multi-year ice, up to 3 meters thick, and it survives through at least one summer. Perennial ice has less salt in it. It's freshwater ice, more bubbles in it. Surface is a lot rougher. And using something called a scatterometer on a NASA satellite, they scanned Arctic ice for perennial and seasonal ice from October 2004 to March 2006, and it was in steady decline. Now, in science world, that tells us something. In not science world, it just tells us that the wacko tree huggers are out to do in the corporate polluters. And they're going to try somehow to make sure that you can't have, you know, I mean, you think Smithfield Meats doesn't have a lobbyist in Washington who's concerned with global warming issues because of the amount of toxicity that operation puts into the environment? Sure they do. They've got Massey Energy, you betcha. They own themselves some they've bought themselves several congressmen and a couple of state legislatures. All on the for cheap. And we can't get a handle on it. And we can't run brilliant people for office. Because brilliant people, by virtue of being brilliant, have probably made mistakes along the way in their lives. You know, maybe you got busted with a doobie in your pocket back when you were in college, or you picked up a DUI, or, you know, you were busted for stream littering. And by virtue of learning from those mistakes, you have become more brilliant, but you must stay out of the political process in the United States because there is a Republican filth machine out there that will destroy you over those things. Now, how do I know it's a Republican filth machine and not a Democratic filth machine? I'll tell you how. Because you know what? The Democrats have been run out of politics. Candidates have been run out of politics for less than that on the Democratic side. And yet a guy with two DUI convictions is president of the United States, and a guy with two DUI convictions is vice president of the United States. That's how I know that the filth machine is a Republican political filth machine. Let's go to the phones and talk to Peter. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Bob.
Happy Friday.
Well, happy Friday to you, too. And I'm calling to talk about the freaking right-wing conservative Christians.
Bring it on.
You know, this whole campaign season is just amazing. You're right. It's going to get dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. You know, phase one of this is, have you noticed the gas prices are dropping?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and
Like a rock.
And, you know, this is... The gas prices have always dropped a little bit after Labor Day, but according to what I was reading today, they started dropping like 2 weeks before Labor Day. Big surprise, and all these phony reasons why, that they're not concerned about some sort of embargo or the way the Iraqis are going to handle oil or the who knows. It's all just so, you know, mirrors and smoke that it's hard to follow their logic. There's no point in even trying to repeat it, but you know it's a backroom deal.
Sure it is.
And the results of all this is that the, you know, recent surveys are saying that things like gasoline prices and cost of living are now falling below the people's concerns for terrorism. It's so damn predictable.
Well, I get those right-wing invitations to have right-wing guests on my program, and every time I invite them, they say no thank you.
Oh, well, they couldn't stand 5 minutes with you, dude.
But I got one today from this guy who said, you know, I can bring you an expert who will explain the media's conspiracy theory frenzy about gas prices. The media now says that gas prices are falling because we're getting near to elections.
Oh, so they're already disarming the argument.
Sure.
It's amazing. And so they're also bringing back in the religious conservative, the Tony Perk. You know, Tony Perkins was in the news today. He's all upset because there's some sort of a lack of interest about this thing about same-sex marriage. And he's all uptight that, you know, the debate is falling off. So now he's trying to link that to religious freedom. He's saying that that's connected to religious freedom in the sense that nobody can speak out and state their views. What he was getting at is his prime thing is that there were a governor in Maryland, Ehrlich, I think his name is, and he fired someone for saying that gay folks were persons of sexual deviancy. And, you know, so that's now his religious belief, even though he was speaking as an official, you know, for the government. But you know, that was so he's being persecuted. You know, they're being persecuted against. They're bringing out that whole we're being persecuted against.
I'm looking at the very story right here, Peter, from the Associated Press. Headline, conservatives say religion under attack.
Under attack.
And this is right from Tony Perkins. Quote, there are a number of pastors that said, look, we don't want to get involved in politics. I'm not going to get involved in this issue. I just want to preach the gospel, said Tony Perkins. When they realize their ability to preach the gospel may very well be at stake, they may reconsider their involvement.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they're being persecuted.
Yeah, they're being persecuted. And contrast that with what happened in Spain today. You know, we're kind of worldwide. We have chatters in the chat room from all over the planet. We have listeners from all over the planet. Well, that being the case, I'd like to congratulate Alberto and Alberto. Yes, two Albertos. They got married today in Spain. And what makes this interesting is that they're both members of the Spanish Air Force.
Hot
their hearts.
Hot diggity.
Hot diggity.
Ay, caramba.
They were married in Seville. The military is probably not particularly happy about it, but their official position is that it's a personal matter, and the men will be allowed to continue their career. And, you know, it caused very little ripple in the press. Nobody's really upset about it. The only people who are upset about it is, guess who? The Catholic Church.
Oh, sure.
Up. Yes, they are having a fit over there.
Meanwhile, the Pope, that tired old ex-Nazi anti-aircraft gunner, is touring Germany and doing everything he possibly can to piss off the nation of Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's got his little red shoes, he's got his House of Whoville hat, and he's doing the tour of the homeland and running around saying that Turkey wants to make jihad on the European Union.
Right. And, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, and I look at myself, you know, and I say, what country do I live in? This is supposed to be the land of the free, and I see, you know, countries like Spain, you know, without blinking an eye over this. And you know, the Spanish people are supposed to have this huge macho Latin, you know, male thing going on, yet it's kind of a non-issue.
But
ruby red slipper people.
But Peter, you know, think about it. The land of machismo, isn't that just a whole bunch of latency? Running around inside the closet. I mean, when you know, over the top masculinity. You know,
I wasn't gonna say anything about that, but since you brought it up.
Well, yeah. I mean, these. You know, this is the leather bar crowd, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, there was an Associated Press poll that was done. The results of it came out today. They were polling. There were like 1,500 adults who were polled. And one of the questions is, you know, how concerned they were about gay marriage, and 22% of the respondents said it was extremely important. But also on that poll was the question, did they approve or disapprove of the way George Bush is handling his job as president? 60% said they disapprove. We're at a time where, you know, a huge majority of people are more upset about George Bush. No wonder they're hauling out the religious conservatives.
Oh, sure. Well, see, they've got to keep these people motivated, and right now, gay marriage is about all they've got left, because they've had, again, we pointed out, and you know, I wish I could get through to some of these fundies, Peter, but I can't. They've had control of the entire government for a while now, and abortion is still legal.
Well, yeah, now this is true.
And it's going to remain legal, because that's the only thing they can use to drag the little knuckle walkers, out of the herpetological park that is their otherwise, you know, that's their congregation.
Well, you know, they can't be too bright to fall for the same trap over and over and over. It's just mind-boggling.
Well, it's a classic case. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Yeah. These people stand for nothing. You know, Bishop Pearson did a wonderful job of pointing out the incredible divorce rates, the abuse rates, the sexual deviance rates inside fundamentalist Christianity.
Yeah.
You know, far beyond what you would expect to see in the same statistical sample of, say, atheists or Unitarians or Episcopals or Lutherans, Presbyterians, Muslims, whatever.
Yes.
And yet it's a den of vipers.
And did I mention that the Spanish Air Force gave Alberto and Alberto permission to wear their military uniforms at the wedding?
Oh, wonderful!
Oh, yes.
I'll bet those. And they've got some Jim Dandy uniforms too.
I know. Well, who could resist a man in uniform? But there's trouble in Colorado too. There's the I wish I had the article in front of me. Three organizations are pressing to legalize civil unions out there, and of course the Family Research. Who's out there? The Dobson guy.
Yeah, Focus on the Family.
Yeah, Focus guy is having a fit over it. And they represent over 100 mainstream churches, everybody from the Methodists, the Episcopals, and on and on and on and on. So there seems to be some resistance in the clergy coming out over in Colorado, which is, of course, the home of the beast as far as that's concerned. But you damn well won't hear about this in the mainstream media.
Oh, heck no. No, because they might, they might get demons called down on them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The whole thing is just very, very interesting.
Well, about Alberto and Alberto.
Oh, yes. Bless them.
I have to just wonder, if they've got someone who answers the phone for them at home.
Well,
may I speak to Alberto? He's not here. Well, may I speak to Alberto? Just a minute, I'll get him.
Yeah. Well, there was another marriage there a while back. There were members of the Civil Guard, which is like a police force that supports the interior, and they're lifelong partners, and they were allowed to marry after the laws changed, and they're allowed to live in the barracks, and it's no big thing,
And why should it be?
And this is in Madrid, Yeah, exactly. Why should it?
But, we've got people with years and years of experience in translating Arabic communications who turn out to be gay, and they got to go because, because George Bush is going to keep us safe. But it's more important to keep us safe from those homo translators than it is to keep us safe from people with box cutters hijacking airliners.
Yeah, there was a time I took all this personally, but not anymore. I see it for what it is. It is calculated manipulation of the population to keep us divided and to keep us diverted from these lying bastards that are
yes.
in control of this country and stealing us blind in every possible way. And, I don't take it personally. I mean, as a civilization, I take it. As an American, I take it personally, but not as no longer as a gay individual. It's not about that. It really
well,
is.
For some, don't let your guard down too far, Peter, because as long as the Dominionists and the Reconstructionists are out there, the gay community is not safe. Because, we know for a fact that the Reconstructionists and the Dominionists are insinuating themselves further and further and further, even into mainstream Protestant sects, and they're to a certain extent, even into Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, well, it's true.
And, this is the guy that when we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, their leader says, I believe in public stoning because there's lots of rocks.
Well, yeah, there's crap like that. And they're insinuating, like the story you were talking about earlier, about the careful cover-up and the deletion of the computer files and all the paperwork, about the research showing that mass, media outlet, local news was not covered nearly as well when media outlets were taken over. Their fingers are insidiously in every damn thing you touch.
Well, yeah, and if you pay attention to things as you do, you'll see what's going down because this idea that Tony Perkins is trying to create the notion that a religion that has 80% of America in its thrall is somehow being persecuted on some level.
As if they can't wear their crosses in Walmart. Give me a freaking break.
I've got a story here where there's a chaplain from the Air Force who says he is being persecuted. His name is John Jacob Klingenheimer Schmidt. No,
you're kidding.
No, his name's Klingenschmidt.
Okay.
Jacob or John Klingenschmidt. And, can't read the story without my name is John Jacob. But... This guy gave a press conference on the steps of some federal facility. I'm being persecuted for my Lord and Savior because the military passed a rule about ending prayers, prayers in front of lots of people of lots of different faith with, in the name of Jesus Christ. And he did it anyway. He disobeyed a direct order and he is, of course, being punished for that.
Yeah.
No, I'm being religiously persecuted because I used the name of my Lord and Savior in a prayer. And all the little right-wing goobers are running around saying, we're being persecuted.
Mm-hmm. As if. And, read the Bible for crying out loud. The Savior of the Christian faith, that's persecution. What are these people whining about? You know, it's persecution. It's simply unbelievable. Pick up your cross and follow me is now pick up your cross and beat the hell out of anybody you can hit with.
Right. You know, when Jesus got frustrated, did he just look up and go, me?
Yeah, right. I am like so totally persecuted. It's hard to believe.
No, persecution is crucifixion's persecution. Again, you know, getting put into a leather jerkin, slathered in olive oil, and put on a post and hung out in the Vatican gardens and set on fire. That's persecution. Choosing not to hate gay people is not persecution of the Christian faith.
No, absolutely not. It's just,
you know, and there is a little bit of good news out there. I'm looking for it. Oh, here's the chaplain.
I'm looking for it. I know it's here somewhere.
I got some good news here, so yeah, it can't hide forever.
Right.
Operation Rescue.
Oh, yeah.
Which became Operation Save America and all of that silly crap, and we talked to them out in we talked to World Can't Wait when they were in Jackson, Mississippi, opposing these goobers. They got their tax exempt status.
Oh yeah,
yanked.
I saw a little blurb about that today.
I was so proud.
Can you believe that slipped through? How the hell did that happen?
Well, these guys were pretty well over the top, Peter. And it's gonna when you play the card this broad and this wide, it's bound to happen. Yeah, here's the story. The Republican donor, no, that's the Swift boat, sorry. They were putting out ads saying,
there was a word they used.
Supposed Catholic baby killer, John Kerry.
Demo deaths or something.
Deathocrats.
Deathocrats, that's it. They were deathocrats. Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah, anti-choice organization, Operation Rescue West. Lost its tax exempt status because on July 15th, 2004, they sponsored a full page ad in an ultra conservative national magazine. The ad entitled "John Kerry is a Catholic baby killing hypocrite" referred to Democrats as deathocrats.
Bibles you forgot, Bible stealing,
yep.
Mama whacking, frog stomping.
John Kerry's going to get your Bible. He's got a whole house full already.
Out of your baby's mouth.
Yeah, but then they promised the tax deduction, or that the donations would be tax deductible as well.
Yeah.
And now they've said that they voluntarily gave up their tax exempt status.
Oh yeah, and that,
you know, just lying. Just lying.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is they got caught. They're dirty, and they don't deserve to have a tax exempt status. But now that they've said that they voluntarily gave it up, I'm sure their fallback position is, we're being persecuted in the name of Christ Jesus.
Well, you know, I heard something remarkable on your show the other evening, and I don't know which caller brought it up. You might have brought it up, but it had to do with the fact that civics disappeared when Reagan came along.
Yeah, that was me.
That was you. Well, I might have known I could attribute that to you. You the man. But that was just, I had been thinking about that for several days, and really that has a lot to do with it. Nobody knows how many branches of government there are anymore or what they do.
Branches? Okay. There's branches?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody understands anymore. And if you don't understand something, you just basically glaze over. So the lies make perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, rewriting the history. How unbelievably diabolical is this?
It has been a concerted effort, Peter. It really has been. And if you catch them in the still and quiet moments, they'll admit it. You know, when Grover Norquist says that he wants to weaken the federal government until you can drown it in a bathtub, what he means by that is he wants a federal government that cannot stand up to thuggish oppressors, people who would subvert the First Amendment. You know, that he wants to get rid of all that, because hand in glove with that is this legislation that gets sponsored periodically in the House that would take away the purview of the IRS to review, not take it away, but allow preachers to campaign from the pulpit and not endanger their tax exempt status.
Yeah, all kind of little laws like that to ensure their victory. You know, in Florida now, it is illegal to hand count the scanned ballots that go through the optical scanner. You can only put them back through the scanner. It's now illegally to count them by hand. thoroughly voided any paper trail. This whole thing about the history about paper trail, gonna have a paper trail. And here's the, okay, fine, you can have it, but you can't count them.
Yeah, here's your paper. Enjoy
how
it.
That happened, Jeb Bush.
That's future President Jeb Bush to you, Peter.
Yeah, and in Ohio, what the hell's going on up there?
Well, you know, yeah, Representative Bob Ney pled guilty today. A couple of days ago, Tom Noe, his buddy from the rare CoinGate scandal, he's going up the river for some several years, probably coming to a club fed in Florida, if I read correctly.
Oh, goody.
You know, that's one of those nice Florida prisons, not the really ugly ones where they do nasty things.
Yeah, the ones with the alligators that have the fence that are fenced on the other side of the chain link.
Yeah. But it goes on and on. Oh, here's one. You brought up the gender community, so I kind of have to go to this one because it's Friday and this won't be worth telling by Monday.
I hope it's something I heard.
A school district in western New York has denied requests from five parents who asked that their children be taken out of high school classes being taught by a transsexual teacher.
No, I haven't heard that one. I really haven't. And what class, what subject was this person teaching?
You know, you're trying to get me in trouble.
Well, you know, I assume it wasn't sex ed. You know, I'm just thinking it was probably something... like, you know, math. You know, what the hell?
Well, you know, that was the first thing I thought. Well, see, this comes from the Religion Freak Press. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, oh, they're teaching gym. You know, I don't know, teaching home ec, fashion, you know.
Yeah, could have been something like that.
No, but, no, this is, let's see. In rejecting the request, says one pro-family leader, the school is deliberately placing children at risk.
Oh yeah, at risk.
Because what? What are they going to do? Come home singing show tunes?
Oh, I hope so.
One fabulous sensation. Oh dear, you've got that transsexual teacher.
Yeah, right. Oh, the band could do it. Football game.
Oh, you know, I mean, and you know, if the transsexual teacher's in the drama department, you know, it can't be long before they put up Rocky Horror Picture.
And Bob, the world will end.
It will.
The world will end.
Let's see. What's this goober? Oh, okay. The Richard Stutzman is the Batavia school superintendent, and he said the reason the written requests were denied is because they didn't meet the guidelines set out by the district. Well, okay, you didn't follow the rules. Well, you know, but we're Christians. If we have to follow the rules, we're being persecuted.
Oh yeah, yeah. But the rules are from the devil.
A male teacher at the high school has been diagnosed with so-called transsexual disorder, says the Associated Press. You know, these things are always written so snidely. Going through medical transition. You know, who would want? You know. Who would do that for fun?
Well, you know what I'm getting at? Done for fun. As far as I know, it takes years of psychological examination and everything. They don't just do it. It's not like, you know, a drive-by.
Right. I mean, Jesus. Bob Knight with the Culture and Family Institute says the district should be putting the interests of its students first, but, quote, like much of the public educational blob, is instead showing utter contempt for the parents.
Oh, yeah.
And he contends that the school district is telling parents it doesn't care if children become sexually confused by the transsexual teacher. And that someone, quote, with a serious gender identity disorder is being placed as a role model in front of the students. You know, if you're a math teacher, it's whether or not you can make heads or tails of algebra.
Well,
I had real troubles with math in high school, and frankly, if I had had a transsexual teacher who could help me understand the additive property of this, that, or I don't care what kind of clothes they're wearing.
Yeah, they have to be drugged, kicking and screaming from one century to the next. It's gone on since the beginning of time. They've had to be drugged, kicking and screaming.
Oh, and he's accusing the school district of being committed to the pansexual revolution.
What?
Pansexual?
That's even over my head. What the hell's that?
I think it has something to do with Zamfir, the acknowledged master of the panpipes.
Oh, God. Okay, well, I'm just going to have to Google that.
And that we're telling parents, you're going to go along with it, and we're not even going to give your kids an out. You know, I don't think you want to be using words like out in a sentence, like in a story, but, you know, it's that's me.
Well, you're right, though, Bob. This is going to get uglier and uglier, and they're talking about, what, 99 million, or what's the total, 99% of the budget, 90% could be spent on attack ads. And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I hate these SOBs. I really, really do, Peter, because here's the real nasty.
Bringing out the Christian right, lowering the gas prices, they're setting it up, baby.
You know, if you can't figure out that you're really a man, you've got the DNA, the genetic sequence for being a man, you can't be a teacher. I think a serious gender identity confusion like this would rule this man out as a good teacher, regardless of his other capabilities.
Well, you know, they did that with transsexuals who had been through the change, who wanted to marry someone of the opposite sex, and they were saying that they still were not allowed to marry because. Now they were saying that your sex was determined by your chromosomes. You know, having a sex change does not alter your chromosomes. You know, X, Y, and X, Y, Y, and X. I'm not a scientist. But so they changed the rules of the game to go to the chromosome level to still prevent people from getting.
Yeah, because once you've been through the transition and had the surgery and everything, if you like guys, that makes you hetero.
Well, no, we've got to look at your chromosomes, dude. I'm sorry. yeah, and it's funny how they get all science is perfect, is perfectly good as long as it's to, you know.
Yeah, we got to use some of that evolutionary science. Oh,
yeah, but
God.
Earth is only, you know, 2,000 years old, and dinosaurs are a trick of the devil.
Yeah, and Adam and Eve and Abraham Lincoln rode to Sunday school on the back of one.
All makes sense to me.
Peter, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, guy. I'll talk to you later.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Bye. And you know what? Our best congratulations to Albert and Albert in Spain. Let's see. Let's move on. Let's go to Richard, who's been waiting quite some time. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm okay. Looking for work. I am wondering if you were talking about your van with the kids and the wife. Is that an Aerostar by any chance?
No, it was a Windstar.
Oh, a Windstar, the successor.
Yes. In fact, it was the first model year. It was a 95.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I thought immediately of the Aerostar that I used to have. Somebody did me a great favor about that vehicle.
Stole it from you?
No, they smashed into it with another Aerostar. and it looked like two Aerostars kissing amidst a lot of broken glass, you know. And the guy was drunk, and the police hauled him off in handcuffs, but he did me such a great favor.
you were never happier than seeing that thing going into the distance.
Well, it was kind of a shock. He went across oncoming traffic against a red light and got hit by another vehicle and shoved right in front of me. So it's like all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I saw this thing coming at me.
Incoming!
He was thrown right in front of me and just kept on coming. So boom! And it was my first Ford, and I think it's my last Ford ever.
Well, you know, that's probably not a bad idea. Although I gotta admit, I've had occasion to be in a couple of Fords recently, and they really have come up in the world.
Oh yeah, yeah. But there's always the question on my mind, you know, doing work as a technical writer and having repaired stuff. The question is, have any of these vehicles been made so that you can fix them?
No.
You know, it's a very severe issue because, like, you know, you got a 5-cent part that you need replaced, and it's buried under $2,000 worth of labor.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Richard. I've got a classic case in point here. For some reason, we've got a couple of Chrysler products.
Yeah.
And those geniuses decide. You know, it used to be that you'd from time to time fuel filters get clogged.
Yeah.
And you've got an inline fuel filter, and you go out and you pull the inline fuel filter, and you put the new one in, and the problem is solved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my Dodge truck, the inline fuel filter is inside the gas tank.
Oh my God!
And I've got a real problem, and I got to get around to fixing it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to drop the whole blessed tank, take the tank assembly apart, pull out the fuel pump, find the fuel filter, change the fuel filter, figure I'll put in a new fuel pump while I'm at it, because God knows when you're doing that kind of a, you know, when you're that far into it, you might as well fix everything.
And what year is it?
That's a 95.
Oh, jeez. Because my friend had a one of their minivans. I forgot the name of it.
The Dodge Caravan.
Yeah. He had a Caravan, and when he needed to change, you know, like you said, it's got two fuel filters, and one you can get at. The other one was on top of the gas tank, and so you had to drop the gas tank.
Yeah.
To replace that filter.
And it's crazy stuff.
Huh?
It's crazy stuff.
Yeah, and I have to say that in electronic equipment, the first place I saw that kind of design was in stuff out of Japan, and I would say that Sony was the worst offender. You know, so people, a lot of people who fix things detest Sony products for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And when it, but I mean, with cars, it's like it's all over the place. I know that Ford was putting out trucks where they put the clutch slave cylinder inside the transmission.
Right.
And you know what we're talking about? What, $2,000 here to change the?
Oh yeah, and that's I'm firmly convinced, Richard, that that is absolutely purposeful design.
I don't think so. You know, I used to have a custom stereo business, and there was a technician who worked for me, and he was yelling all the time about planned obsolescence because, of course, he had to face it on the repair bench. But having worked in an engineering environment as a writer, I have a little bit of a different slant on it. I don't, in fact, think that it's planned obsolescence. I just think it's total inconsiderateness.
Well, you don't think it's a way of propping up, propping up the garages? I mean, when you consider the way that warranty work is paid out by the company through the dealerships and all of that, you don't think that there's an element of pre-planning in there somehow?
I don't, actually. And the one thing that you really have to consider about warranty work, this is really interesting, is that no manufacturer wants to pay for that. They try to weasel out every possible way. You know, if there's an independent shop, I'm talking electronics now, if there's an independent repair shop in your area and they have a warranty relationship with the manufacturer, the reason why they'll do that is so that they have a pipeline to parts for the people who pay, who are out of warranty. But in warranty stuff, they get paid such a pittance it doesn't even compensate them for doing the paperwork.
Hmm.
The whole situation stinks.
Well, I've seen it happen over the course of, and I'm no mechanic. I mean, I can change my own oil, I can change a battery.
Right.
Bless her heart, my wife can pull an engine. But you know, I can do some of my own stuff, and I've seen some bizarre engineering things, and then I've seen engineering that just looks plain mean.
I sure have too, and mean, it translates to me to stupid and inexperienced.
Well, here's a perfect example. I love Porsche automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
On the 944, which had a four-cylinder engine, it had those pop-up headlights. And the armature for the pop-up headlight was in such a place that when you went to change your oil and you went to take off the oil filter, Richard, once you got it unscrewed and you went to pull it up, the space between the distributor cap and the armature for the pop-up headlights was just a few millimeters too small to get the damn filter through.
Correct. This is stupidity.
And on the bottom end, you couldn't get it out the bottom either.
Right.
And a buddy of mine, another Porsche aficionado, and I sat there and we cracked open a couple of bottles of German beer and tried to get into our Teutonic automotive thinking.
Yeah.
And by God, we did.
Uh-huh.
Because the first couple of times, we wound up taking the distributor cap off to get the filter out.
Oh, man.
But then once we got into the right mindset, we realized that there was a manual switch there, and you flip it, and the headlights pop up, the armature pops out of the way, the headlights turn on for a minute, and you pull the filter out.
Hmm.
And it was completely counterintuitive to anything I had ever experienced.
And so if you had the official factory book, it would tell you that because somebody...
Well, I had the Haynes manual, and that thing was based on a complete tear down and rebuild, and it wasn't in there.
Yeah, well, Haynes is not what it used to be.
Well, you know, I always went with Haynes instead of Chilton, because Chilton has broken my heart more times than I can count.
Yeah, but see, now I think Haynes is just as bad as everybody else. These guys have, you know, they have a service department in-house, you know, and they say, can you fix this? And the guys go through what you know, take the distributor cap off, and they say, okay, this is how it can be done. And the design people say, okay, cool. You know,
yeah,
you can do it. Out the door it goes. The typical thing that happens in an engineering environment is, and if anybody else is listening who can comment on this from experience, I'd love to hear, is that the guys are working on stuff, you know, and the boss comes along and says, okay, finish that project by 5 o'clock because we got this other thing to do. And,
yeah,
you know, so out the door it goes. And then the other, you know, the other situation I've seen is that kids come out, you know, engineering students come out of school, they're really green, and they're doing some good design work, but they have a tendency to go to this shelf that's full of catalogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they pull the books out, and they look, and they say, oh, wow, there's an integrated circuit that will do, you know, what I want to do. And they never stop to think that maybe they should pick another integrated circuit because this one that they just chose may not be around for more than a year.
Mm.
You see,
yeah,
so that when it comes time to fix that product, the owner's going to be SOL because that IC is not, cannot be had. This is has been a problem with Yamaha stereo receivers. That certain integrated.
Well, I learned a hard lesson several years ago about buying Zenith televisions.
Oh yeah, I don't even know what company that is anymore.
I don't either, but their boards they've got proprietary boards in them.
Yes.
And they're unfixable. Hey, Richard, we've run out of time. I enjoy these conversations so very much.
Oh boy, I got a whole bunch of things I want to talk with you about.
Oh darn. But we're out of time. Can you save it for maybe Monday?
Oh, I see the clock. Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Okay. Have a great weekend, Richard.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye, Agnes.
Bye, Richard.
She says bye. All right. Later.
Okay. Bye.
And yeah, Jim, you still there, Jim?
Oh yeah. Is this Kim Commando?
No. Not nearly as cute.
I see. Listen, the only thing I can say to what Peter said is this. To a lot of these people, DNA is a traffic offense, and chromosomes are something you put on your cereal.
Oh, well put, Jim. What a good cap you've put on the night.
Good night.
Later. I'm going to have me some chromosomes on my cinnamon life in the morning. Jeez. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely and talented, my darling wife, Agnes. We got over the technical hump early this evening. I don't know. We were about ready to cash it in and go home. Oh no, she wasn't. She won't give up. It's announced by Brian Reznor. The chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network is our good friend John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at White Rose Society maintains the streams and the archives of all the programs on the Horn, and of course we co-stream. Our streaming partner is Shelby Lepre at radiopower.org. Enjoy the programming there at Radio Power and help out when you can. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional, and what a professional he is. Our good friend Gene is the news editor of the headonradionetwork.com news division. And every program on the Horn happens every day because there are several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up, and they go to work, and they literally build the American dream. And in supporting this network, they're trying to save the American dream, too. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
Let's start all over. Go ahead. Bring the music back up. Good evening, truth seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. 7:30 past the hour. Program produced by Catherine Bay. My mouth is run by, I don't know, the mechanism is not working real well today, so maybe you want to call in and help out. Robin Bittman is our announcer. The phone number here is 800-825-5937. That's 800-TALK-YES. Email? Indeed. Mike D. Malloy at earthlink.net. I completely missed this story. I don't know why. Day before yesterday, did you hear what happened to Charles Schumer, senator, senior senator from New York? He's traveling on a small plane. The passenger door blew open on the airplane that Senator Charles Schumer, Democrat, was flying on. He was on, I don't know why, he was heading for Binghamton, New York, I guess, for a speech when the mishap